Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Good evening. You are live with Tex and Rex, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from near the ninth circle of hell, otherwise known as I-495, the Capitol Beltway around Washington, D.C., where tonight on 14th Street at Busboys and Poets, the four alternate party presidential candidates had a debate moderated by Ralph Nader, and my host is here with me as well.
Yes, this is Rex broadcasting from Houston. So we saw the debate tonight, Tex. What were your thoughts on it, and how much of that were you actually able to get?
Well, Rex, Tex, whatever your name is, I was just on Robert Jetter's Bard's Logic political talk, and Chris made the same mistake, called me Tex, Rex. So I'm not even sure who I am today, but I did try to watch the debate, and actually I caught a good part of it, but that was one big clusterfuck. The streaming was off, and then there was no audio, and then there was intermittent audio, and then the whole thing went down, and Democracy Now! Was piped in. I mean, it was a disaster. And Tex,
you know, they need
Rex,
some of those bus
whatever.
Boys to work on their internet connection, because bus boys, they're like young, they could probably do that, but I think like a bunch of old people were trying to work on this and get it working on their punch card loom or something.
Yeah, it was the poets. They were like, oh shit, a vacuum tube just blew. What do we do? I think, look, Tex, Rex, whatever the fuck your name is, I think the problem is that the duopoly, which is allegedly a choice between the left candidate and the right candidate, the conservative and the liberal, which is owned by the same corporate interests and the media, which 95% of our media is owned by six corporations that have interlocking directorates, just shuts this stuff out. And because the populace is relatively uninterested in paying attention to politics until right before an election, which is exactly the wrong time to do it because you should have been paying attention up to the election, because by this point, most of us already decided.
Or already voted.
Allow this to happen. Yeah, or people have already voted. A third of people apparently vote before Election Day, which is just ridiculous. But anyway, so it's that we allow it to happen. And then when somebody says, no, this is wrong, we're going to stand up for liberty, it's like last minute, you know, jury rig, you know, threadbare mess.
Wait,
so, you know, it's not good. And I think that the real issue is that free and equal.
Hell, apparently the damn convention's too late, too. You can even have the delegates. And, oh, yeah, well, we already decided. Well, when the hell did all this deciding go on? Oh, yeah, well, that was like 2 years ago because we met with Mitt Romney and he agreed to pay a lot of candidates in Republican offices a bunch of money, and so now we all support him. Yeah, the voters will just do what we say. Well, Karl Rove.
He's severely conservative. I mean, here's the problem, okay? And actually, you know what, Tex? I think we need to define some terms. I've had some engagements online with the fear-stricken, panicked people who think they are, people who think they are conservative, just freaking the fuck out because they're like, oh, it's Obama, we got to get rid of Obama, oh my God, the sky's falling, it's Obama, you got to vote for Romney, you know, and you give them some facts, and they get confused. So let's define a few terms. Corporate, as in a corporation, is a fictitious entity put together to operate a business enterprise And so that's what a corporation is. A corporation is in and of itself not a bad thing. It can actually be useful in a free market economy for the transactions that businesses need to engage. Corporatism is not the same as a corporation. Sometimes you tell people, well, Romney's a corporatist. What's wrong with corporations, man? We need them to create jobs. Corporatism is when a few corporations, owned usually by the same financiers, leverage their connections to politicians and their overwhelming amount of fabricated money given to them by the central bank in order to control politics and manage the market through regulation, not to make the market more regular, which is what our founding fathers intended. They intended the government to make markets more regular, meaning to eliminate fraud, crime, to help enforce contracts through the courts, that sort of thing, to make the market regular, to make it work. They use the regulations in order to bolster their position, block competition, and essentially merge the government and the corporations into one entity that is controlled by a few elite financiers, and that's corporatism, sometimes referred to as fascism, although fascism tends to have a nationalist bent, and post the National Socialists of Germany now has kind of a racist bent as well. But so corporatism is probably the more appropriate terminology. Mitt Romney is one of these guys. Oh, his business experience, he's a free market guy, he's going to create jobs. Bullshit, bullshit, and bullshit. Mitt Romney is a corporatist who wants to use the government in order to secure the market for his interests and his friends' interests and those who paid for him, their interests, at the expense of a true free market, at the expense of Main Street, at the expense of small businesses, at the expense of the American citizen. So get that through your heads. If you're a conservative, you are not supporting Romney. The only thing that conservatives have, Republicans have to support Romney, is he's not Obama. Big deal. Am I right, Tex?
Pretty much. Everyone I talk to, that essentially is what it comes down to. You know, if I were, you know, in some sort of nightmare scenario where I was, you know, screwed and either the only outcomes were going to be that Obama or Romney wins. Oh, crap. That's the world I'm living in. Damn.
Wake up till your nightmare.
The only other glimmer of hope would be that, you know, I think Wall Street didn't like its investment in Obama and basically kept the economy kind of, you know, on life support in order to help get this fool out of office. And Romney is their new guy, and he's sort of their golden boy now. And so they may be happier after it's over, and, you know, you may start seeing some investments and the economy start picking up again. That would be the only good thing that I could see coming out of this. But, you know, I'll be honest, right now, I can't even tell if Romney's winning. You know, I thought, you know, he did great for the base. He's run away with it. You look at those swing states, he sucks. I mean, it's the whole thing. And it comes down to, what are these guys running on? What is Barack Obama going to do in the next 4 years? I don't know.
Same thing.
What is Mitt Romney going to do?
The same
thing. What's
Romney
going to do? Exactly.
The same thing. It's the same crap. That's what we're getting with either one of these losers. Now, I'll tell you this. I don't actually think that Romney did all that well in the debates, but, you know, he only did slightly worse than Obama. They both sucked, and the debates were actually awful. I mean, it was just a mental masturbation between two guys that agree on pretty much everything except that they want to be the one to oversee the disaster as opposed to the other guy. You know, the narrative was that Romney kicked ass, and so he got this, quote, bump in the polls. But if you look at the Electoral College, it never moved. So, I mean, he's got an insurmountable electoral lag. He's got to come up with 80 electoral votes, and all statistics show that if Romney does not win Ohio, I mean, he's fried.
Real clear politics is still showing Obama 201, Romney 191. I mean, it's been like that for a while. Now,
right.
It did used to be Obama 265 to, you know, Romney 191. But, you know, so now some things are kind of toss-ups, I guess. But, you know, Romney...
Not really.
Obama went 265 to 201. Okay. Romney went 191 to 1... Oh, actually, he for a while was at 201 as well, and then now he's back at 191. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think the guy's really helping himself.
Yeah, and it's look, here's the thing. If we were to go with these polls and say who's going to win, without a question, it's Obama, which is what we told them when we said, you've got Gingrich, you've got Paul, shit, for that matter, you got Santorum. I mean, you know, you and I both feel kind of the same way about him. But nevertheless,
he's a fake.
You had Gingrich and Paul, for God's sake. You'd be mopping the floor with Obama right now. But no, you needed Romney. Well, here's what I think, though. Even though statistically right now it looks like it's Obama, the narrative that I'm hearing, if you try to read between the lines and look at alternate sources and try to, you know, sort through the tea leaves, tells me there's a really good chance that this thing's locked up for Romney. The Hart Intercivic machines in key districts in Ohio, owned by a company that is owned by or has a significant interest by one of Romney's sons. If we look at the algorithms that were done in the primary vote. So, you know, and look, everybody's, oh, voter fraud, blah, blah, blah. You know, they can't manage a whole election. They don't need to manage a whole election. All Romney needs to do is win a couple of key swing states in whatever way he does it, and boom, it's done. So
well,
I don't know how it's going to play out, and does it make a difference?
You couldn't do it like in 84 when Reagan's just like, hey, I'm Reagan, you're Mondale, you know, get out of here. You can't do it like that. But when they're nail biters and they're really close, then there is, you know, opportunity for fraud. We've seen this in the governor's race to Washington with, who was it, Linda Gregoire. And we saw that with Al Franken, his election.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we see it over and over again. All of a sudden, oh, I found a bunch of votes in the trunk of my car. Who knew, you know?
Yeah,
and then apparently,
crazy.
Like, nobody shoots that dude. They're just like, wow.
Yeah.
The guy drove around for like a week with a whole bunch of votes in his car. Well, I guess we ought to count them, you know.
Yeah.
So
well, let's see who they're
like
let's
this,
see who they're for before we
is
count.
Close. Now they're in their zone. So like, hey, just a little few votes here or there, you know, could change the whole thing. And I think that's what's
right.
happening.
Well, I mean, we learned that lesson in 2000 with the Gore Bush fiasco. So here's a simple thing.
And they're already saying, okay, it's already come out. People talking on TV stating that they don't think we'll know until late into the evening, and we might not know for several days afterwards.
Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be a nail biter for two reasons. One, you get people excited and distracted. They don't pay attention to the fraud. Two, you make sure you get your ducks in a row so that if anybody does find the fraud, they don't find enough of it to swing the election away from the results that you wanted. But here's the point. We can talk about this all night, and it's really just kind of frivolous because the fact is that one of two things is going to happen, even though there's a third possibility that we've talked about where no one gets 270. But let's just focus on the two most likely scenarios. Either Romney wins or Obama wins. Either way, nothing changes other than diplomatic appointments and which morons are actually overseeing the executive department. Other than that, not much changes at all. So why?
Well,
why is this happening?
Exactly. You want to talk about the third-party debate tonight, whatever we could discern of it?
That's exactly what I wanted to get into, Tex, and here's why. Because people keep saying third party. Well, there isn't a second party. So these are really alternate parties, meaning that it's an actual competitor to the duopoly. And it's very interesting because there are significant and real issues to discuss that are never brought up in the media, never brought up in the public debate, but they have been addressed by the free and equal debate, which was a couple of weeks ago. What I didn't like about the free and equal was the internet voting runoff that occurred afterwards, so that tomorrow's free and equal debate, which is, I believe, at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, right, is only between
yep.
Jill Stein and Gary Johnson. Now, I think that won't be the most interesting debate because Jill Stein's actually not that good at debating, but at least we will get a fiscal discussion between a left-leaning, a total left socialist and a fiscal conservative, because whatever you feel about Gary Johnson, he is Ron Paul, he's not Ron Paul, he is a libertarian, he's not a libertarian, whatever. On economic policy, Gary Johnson is a fiscal conservative. So that'll at least be an interesting debate to see between socialism and free markets tomorrow night. But that unfortunately, because they did that, Ralph Nader stepped up and said, no, we need all voices heard. Remember, this is a man who got arrested and shut out of debates that he was legitimately supposed to be in last time round. And so he had the debate tonight with all four candidates. And if it was better organized and had been planned ahead, which it should have been, and that's not his fault, that's, I think, the candidates' fault for not having organized this themselves before that, we could have really actually heard the whole thing. We didn't hear most of it, but we did hear some parts of it. And the interesting thing is that this is important, and frankly, I think it'll be on YouTube tomorrow with the full audio, and everybody should check it out. I think the real key behind this is if you were to get the last free and equal debate and this free and equal debate into the hands of some of these 90 million voters who won't be voting on November 6th, we might actually see something very exciting. So your mission, if you choose to accept it, listener, is download the MP3 of this show from our page and also get the YouTube of the debate tomorrow, and you should be able to find it on the Busboys and Poets website, and get it to your friends who are not voting.
Yeah, the people who aren't voting. I mean, at least have them go vote for something. Just don't sit around and watch the thing go off the freaking cliff. But I just want to say I took down some notes while I was watching this. And
sure.
This is a quote that I got when Jill Stein was talking. She just said, biggest forest fires, the Arctic drill, baby drill. Obama has a few transfer, massive increasing. Thankfully, there's
Sorry.
A wonderful solution at the same time.
Sorry.
So
Sorry,
that basically is what the debate was like when you were trying to listen to this thing. There was
I'm sorry, we're losing your audio.
Audio problem throughout the entire thing. You literally, it was like, you know, machine gun fire of words, and then all of a sudden it would go quiet, then you'd hear some other words, and that whether or not you could string them in together into a sentence was anyone's guess. Oddly enough, I could hear Virgil Goode quite well. Also, I could hear Rocky Anderson. But did you notice that Ralph Nader's microphone wasn't even on? Everybody else was mic'd. He wasn't mic'd, so I thought that was kind of strange.
Well, it was. I think you heard Mr. Goode because his gait of speech, which is a very Virginia gait of speech, was actually in sync with the skipping audio. Therefore, his voice was not cut out as much, which I thought was interesting. But
the slow blade gets through.
If you take if you take those skipping clips and you play them backwards, okay, it actually says, "Don't vote Romney, don't vote Obama," which I thought was really interesting. So I don't know if it was unintentional, but that's what happened when I relooped it and played it backwards. But then it kind of cleared up, and we got. I actually think we got some interesting stuff. There was real questions asked. They did talk about civil liberties. They talked about drones. They talked about the sections 1021 and 1023 of the 2011 NDAA, which I thought was, again, I mean, they addressed that last time, but again, since we've had multiple debates with the duopoly morons, and we never heard anything mentioned about this, I thought it was great that it was brought up again because people need to hear it. What people don't understand about 1021 and 1023 of the NDAA, and this is fascinating to me because Rocky Anderson and Jill Stein, who are both off the deep end lefties, okay? I mean, when they asked Rocky Anderson what he thought the biggest threat was, it's global climate change. Are you kidding? But we'll get into that in a minute. But and Johnson, the libertarian, and Goode, the conservative, were all in agreement under the Constitution that indefinite detention of Americans is a power that the Constitution specifically forbids the federal government to have. The interesting thing is that Obama expressed reservations about this in his signing order when he signed the bill on New Year's Eve. Wonder why in the news cycle you would sign something this diabolical on New Year's Eve. But he signed it anyway, and then he said that he had concerns, but he wouldn't use this power. Yet when someone sued to have that stricken in the law, his Justice Department, which has chosen not to say, you know, defend, oh, I don't know, the Defense of Marriage Act, went after to get those provisions put back into the law for indefinite detention. And Romney said that he would be very happy to sign it as it is. So when you're voting Obama and you're voting Romney, and let's face it, 90% of voters who are voting Obama are voting Obama out of fear of Romney, and 90% of voters who are voting Romney out of fear of Obama. Well, since they're completely both 100% in agreement on indefinite detention of Americans and on drone strikes and the presidential kill list, you should be scared shitless of both of them and vote for one of these candidates. Wouldn't you agree with that, Tex?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I would say is, you know, look, when the two parties are running, there's not a lot of difference between them, right? Because there is sort of a Washington consensus as to how things should operate, right? You know, mm-hmm. and that's both good and bad because if there's completely no consensus whatsoever, every time a new party came in, everything would be 360 degrees different, well, 180 degrees different than where it was before. But, you know, the issue is coming down to there's always dissent, okay, in Washington. So some people don't like it, but the limits of dissent are kind of clearly defined. And if you're outside what's considered a acceptable level of dissent, then Washington wants you to go the hell home. And the way they do that is they get your party, if you're a congressman, they get your party to fund the opposition against you to get rid of you because now you're sort of outside, you're beyond the pale, if you will. But in this election, you've got two candidates that are so similar, and it's so apparent that they're so similar, that, I mean, I think that if you don't figure it out now, you're never going to figure it out, you know? I mean,
mm-hmm.
what do you want? You know, like, you know, twins or something? I mean, at what point do you not realize, like, hey, these guys freaking agree on absolutely everything, you know? And this whole system seems to stink, and it's stunk for a while. You guys all know it. You know, but if you don't get it now, man, I mean, I don't know what we could do for you. Anyway, go ahead, Rex.
I agree with you. And, you know, to continue with that, looking at what they talked about, you know, that NDAA portion really stuck out for me. And, you're exactly right. It's the ongoing, you know, police, state, defense, security establishment that kind of pushes these things through, and they put in candidates who basically just sign off on it, and so, you know, the march goes on. The only way you stop it is to put principled men and women who will keep their oath to the Constitution true and will actually, you know, make some changes towards where it's supposed to be, which I thought was very interesting because Good actually got a little fired up. He actually kind of had a Newtonian moment, and I wish I had the exact quote or a clip, but maybe we'll get to that next time.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, he was doing good.
Yeah, he was doing really well. He basically talked about the oligarchy and about liberty, and he kind of got fired up and pulled kind of like a Gingrich type of gusto there, which I thought was very powerful because, first of all, he's running on the Constitution Party ticket, so you'd figure, hey, they must all be all about the Constitution, which is specifically what he said more or less in every question he was asked, especially vis-a-vis foreign policy. He said, you know, I'm going to follow the Constitution. Well, it sounds, you know, quaint. You know, it's sort of like what Ron Paul was talking about. And that, you know, is that really important? I mean, do we want to hear that? Yes. The whole reason for the Constitution is to restrain the activities of government and those whom we hand power to temporarily. And I thought that that was really good that he brought that up. And he addressed that. And then shortly thereafter, they jumped into money and politics, you know, super PACs and the hundreds of billions that are spent on negative ads, basically saying, don't vote for the other guy, he sucks, without ever telling anybody why why they should vote for you. They just you just tell the other guy sucks, which I think is, you know, that only works in a duopoly. It's only you can only do that if you've got two candidates. If there's more than two candidates, you can't just simply say, well, the other guy sucks, because then people might say, well, okay, if the other guy sucks, then I'll vote for the third guy, not for you. So then you actually have to stand on something, and that's precisely why this is going on. They don't want this kind of debate heard, because then the Democrat and the Republican would actually be forced to stand for something as opposed to just simply telling the other guy sucks. But I thought it was really cool, because following what they did in Tampa, and from, you know, based on our broadcast when we were down there, Tex, they brought up a picture of John Boehner dressed in a kind of like a NASCAR suit with all the corporate logos of his owners or, quote, contributors on it, which I just thought was freaking hilarious. I don't know if you saw that.
Yes, I did. I thought that was particularly tasteless.
It was very tasteless, but I think it was particularly appropriate. At first, I was like, why is there some random dude in the background of the debate just putting a picture up? They should have had it up a little earlier, a little bit more clear.
Yeah.
but it was interesting to me because they asked the question, you know, does all this money change the votes of the elected representatives, or are they simply collecting money for something for which they were already voting? And I thought it was kind of interesting because I seriously doubt any amount of money is going to change somebody's mind about an issue. It might change their vote, but I don't know that it will change their mind. And I think that's the essence of corruption, is that if you have valueless politicians with no principles, then yes, whoever pays them the most or provides them with the most benefit is going to be the one whom they legislate for.
The policy is not to change people's mind, but to pick people who already agree with you, and therefore you don't have to do that much cajoling.
Exactly. And that's precisely why we're not hearing about these other candidates, because, well, they might have some principles or some differences with the corporatist masters. So I thought that was interesting. And then I thought it was kind of ironic, though, that Johnson was basically saying that right after Virgil Goode said that he thinks that there should be massive campaign contribution limits and no super PACs, no corporations, no unions, he said only individuals should transparently contribute up to a specified limit to a candidate, which I think is pretty accurate, because the whole point is our elected representatives are supposed to represent us, the people. Well, the Senate is supposed to represent the states, but that's an academic discussion at the moment, rather than representing unions, banks, corporations, or anything else. It should represent us as individuals directly. So I thought that was pretty interesting. But then Johnson says he doesn't think there should be any contribution limits. And I thought it was interesting that the alternate party candidate with the most money is the one who's least interested in capping the contribution limits. Just thought it was
absolutely. And, you know, one of the things about this campaign finance is, you know, they limit the amount you can contribute to the candidate. Now, you know, why would they do that? Well, I suspect it is in order to make the candidate less powerful than the party. Because you can give an unlimited amount to the party, you can't give an unlimited amount to the candidate. And so, you know, in a perfect system, you would support the candidate, not the party. But by supporting the party and by allowing super PACs to have this unlimited control, what they've done is they've removed the power away from the candidate to run his own election, and instead the party leadership and the PACs can run the party. So it really is a system, our current campaign finance system really is a system to once again silence the voice of the people. Because if you like a candidate, you contribute up to that limit or whatever, and then you can't do anything else. And then the super PACs come in with millions of dollars because they get unlimited funding from God only knows where, and they don't really have to disclose that. And then they just start spending and, you know, doing various things. Or if they don't like you, they don't spend. You know, I think Newt kind of had a dodgy PAC this time around. I don't think it did too much to help him. But you know, I mean, one of the things you got to do is reform the campaign finance system. So basically, you can give, you know, money directly to the candidates rather than to the parties. And so they probably should raise the amount that you can give to candidates and set limits on how much you can give to the freaking party.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, the discussion of finance reform, I mean, number one, that's not a discussion that a presidential candidate should be having. So I don't really think it's appropriate to be discussing that, because the fact is that you're running under the current rules. It is a discussion that we should have, but not in Congress. And I think that's where the problem is. When Congress is doing it, these guys are in the system. They're in Washington. So they're not going to, A, vote for their own term limits, or, B, limit their own ability to raise funds to get reelected. If you truly want campaign finance reform, then it has to go to where it actually belongs, where elections actually occur, and that's the states. It is up to the state legislatures to determine how the campaigns operate within their state, and that's where you have more authority and more power to limit it the way that you want. Now, some people say, well, what if, like in New York, they let it be unlimited, and in a place like West Virginia, they put a cap on it? Well, guess what? The guy running in New York does not represent West Virginia, so who cares? So if you limit it for all of the candidates in West Virginia, then you'll get good candidates out of West Virginia. Oh, well, but New York will have, you know, corporatist candidates because they allowed it to be unlimited. Well, that's precisely why we have competition, because then the crooks will stand out like sore thumbs if they're bought and paid for by the states that allow massive contributions, and the good guys, or at least the guys who are governing as they ran, would come from the other states. And I think that we would see, you know, a change, and everything would, you know, change over. But that again is why the states have to be empowered to do these things. So I thought that was interesting. Of course, you know, Tex, you and I, having studied history, we both are familiar with how corruption happened in Rome. So the real issue is corruption. Wouldn't you agree? I mean,
well,
that's
yeah.
What it does.
I mean, you know, I always said that, you know, I talk about Einstein's theory of relativity, where energy equals matter, right? Well, money equals power. And the United States has more, you know, money concentrated in it than anyone else. And we also have more military power concentrated in us than anyone else. I mean, our military spends more than all other militaries combined. So you're going
to
have people coming and going after that money and power. They want access to it, or they want to use their money to influence the use of the power, and vice versa. So, you know, you're just sort of ripe for corruption. And what you're seeing now is foreign governments. I mean, think about this. Look, we all know that the United States pretty much can go in any country it wants to. If we say that, hey, you guys have behaved badly in some way, however we define it, sometimes justly, sometimes not justly, but you guys have done wrong, and we're going to go in and, you know, get rid of this dictator, whatever the heck it is, or whatever. You know, once that happens, I mean, that's done. That's what we're doing. And the other side, there's really not much they can say about it. And people may yell at the United States, but they really can't stop it, right? So if you are outside Fortress America, you probably have a massive incentive to try to influence what the United States is doing, because you don't want to end up, you know, stuck in a spider hole somewhere, or, you know, dragged out of your car in the streets like, you know, Gaddafi or whatever. So foreign money is trying to find ways to influence our system. And, you know, that's one thing we have to be careful of, because before, you know, it's always kind of important, but you had two powers. You had the U.S. and the Soviet Union. Well, you also had the non-aligned movement. But you could kind of play the two off against each other. When there's only one, and, you know, that one seems to, you know, have a hair trigger, you know, foreign money wants to find its way in. Anyway, I want to talk about something, because you mentioned Rocky Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And
did
his biggest issue, as you did, you made that mistake of mentioning Rocky Anderson. So one of the few answers I could actually understand before I sort of tuned out and just decided I was doing way too much work was he was talking about, you know, the most important issue. And he said, he mentioned climate change, which you talked about. And he said, according to all Academy of Sciences, we have just a few years to save the planet, the environment, I don't know, the green. Oh, really? Okay. Well, so, spoiler alert, I've actually met with the heads of several academies of sciences over in Europe and places in Asia and stuff like that. But they don't all agree. Actually, a few of them think we're nuts. The Russians are like, it used to be a lot hotter than this. A hell of a lot hotter, like in the Triassic period. I mean, we're talking like 6 degrees warmer, you know?
Yeah.
And the correlation between CO2 and temperature is, I mean, it's like nothing. I mean, it's not zero.
It's tenuous. Well, it's tenuous at best, though. I mean, it's hardly there.
So, you know, the thought that this is some kind of crushing crisis, and that if you elect Rocky Anderson, he's going to go fix the climate of the planet, is just laughable, absolutely laughable. I voted, now we're going to change the climate of the planet. Yeah, okay, whatever. I don't know anything about how the world works or where temperature comes from or physics. And then he was talking about, well, I'm for an all-of-the-above energy strategy. He says, but if all of the above means oil, gas, and nuclear power, then I'm for none of the above. Now, when I hear that, there's only two questions that can come to your mind. First is he pandering? You know, just because he thinks this is the vote segment that he's going for. So he's going for the, I guess, idiot vote who doesn't know anything about energy or how it works, how much it costs, where it comes from. Or does
do we really need
this?
It?
Yeah.
Well, either way, does it make a difference? He's unfit for office because of that kind of mentality. I mean, what is he going to, like, outlaw the sun? You know, it's a little insane, but I think that this kind of reveals both Anderson and, for that matter, Stein. It reveals their socialist agenda and their understanding that if you put forward a socialist agenda in the United States, it will be totally resisted by all but, you know, the 1% of people who are proud to be socialists. So you have to put it through under the guise of something else. And clearly, the green or environmentalist thing is a great way to do that. So I just thought that was what they were both going for. You know, and obviously for conservatives, that's kind of untenable.
Well,
I mean, it's not that we don't like the environment. I mean, we're conservationists and we favor the environment, but I think that, you know, free market solutions are the way. You know, the more private property there is, the more commerce that there is, the more people are going to want a cleaner environment and no trespassing of pollutants on other people's property. And clearly, we've shown it because as we become more affluent, our environment has become significantly cleaner.
Exactly. Well, you know, so Rocky Anderson's talking about this kind of stuff, saying climate change is the biggest issue. And then he's saying, you know, I don't think oil, gas, and nuclear should be the solution to our energy problem, even though those are the cheapest ways to produce energy and most practical. But what he doesn't say is what Jill Stein's saying. She at least, I mean, I don't think she knows really what she's talking about at all, because I don't think she thinks about beyond, like, the first step. She doesn't think about the implications of the first step, which is not what you want in a leader. But she's talking about her Green Jobs program. And,
her Green New Deal.
What's that?
Her Green New Deal.
Yeah, Green New Deal. That's what it's called. Yes, it's a Green New Deal. So you Democrats, you like Roosevelt, and you like things that are green. So now Roosevelt's like the Incredible Hulk, and he's green. So it's not a Green New Deal. So the concept there, now Rocky Anderson doesn't talk about this. You know, maybe he does have some kind of coherent plan, but I certainly couldn't hear it tonight with the audio the way it was. The problem with this Green New Deal idea is that these industries have to be subsidized.
Mm-hmm.
One way or another, in order to compete effectively, which means you have to tax the crap out of energy that's actually useful or in a useful form and energy that we use. So your bills are going to go up, right? Or you have to subsidize the heck out of the non-competitive industries, which we pay for the subsidies, you the taxpayer, because where's the government getting the money to do all these things? It gets it from you. And yes, it can go to the Federal Reserve and say, hey, I need like another trillion this year. And they're like, okay, here's a
trillion.
Still
comes from you.
Exactly. But this time when they go get it from the Fed, you got to pay it back with interest, right? So now you're subsidizing, you just raise the cost of energy up to go compete with this new green energy, right, which you're also subsidizing. So you yourself, who right now don't have one of these new cars or whatever, you know, you're going to pay more for your fuel, okay? So now you got less money in your pocket rolling around every month. Then your cost of electricity is going to go up because when you start producing electricity with a lot of stuff like photovoltaics and wind and all this other kind of junk, you know, the cost of your electricity is going to go up. So now you're paying for the subsidy for the industry. You're paying more in terms of fuel costs because they're taxing it now to make it cost competitive with their fantasy energy. And now you're paying for it in your electricity bill. And then they give tax incentives to encourage you to go buy these cars, right? Or whatever the heck it is that they want you to do, weather stripping, I don't know, right? So who's paying for the tax incentives? Where is that money coming from? It's coming from you. So now you're paying somebody to go buy a Prius or something that is an expensive way to move around, right? So you're paying like four or five times. Essentially what you're doing is creating an entire fake industry based on a failed model for producing energy, and you're subsidizing the hell out of it just because you don't like the existing industry. It's a recipe for disaster. It is not a jobs program. Yes, probably within the first 3 years they could probably create so many jobs, but ask people at Solyndra how many jobs they got out of that, you know? I mean, if it doesn't make economic sense, the laws of economics are very much like the laws of physics. They don't go away, and they will assert themselves, and if you pretend they don't exist, they will, not even gently, but they will remind you that they do exist, and the whole thing comes crashing down. So I just think that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard. And
well,
I think she doesn't even know what it is. She just thinks it's a good slogan.
Yep. And, Tex, I mean, I think what you bring up is, I mean, that's exactly where they're both coming from, because neither one of them is a, quote, environmentalist. I mean, maybe they have, I'm not saying that they want to destroy the environment, but it's clearly a way of smuggling in redistribution of wealth. The difference with Stein and Anderson is they want to redistribute wealth to those who don't have it, whether it's because they're incapable or they're just lazy is besides the point. They just want to spread it around. On the other side, you've got Romney and Obama who want to redistribute wealth from the poor and middle class up to the financiers and the corporatists. And that's exactly what all these programs that you talked about just do, because when you penalize certain segments of the energy industry, say oil and coal and gas, then you will create a market for wind and photovoltaic and all the other stuff. And then what happens is if you hedged your bets already by investing in those industries that the market doesn't support, and then you create a market for it, then you get a windfall profit, and you're basically subsidizing it at the expense of the people.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we continue, I just want to let you know that I've already brought Krog, Chris from Coalition of Freedom on Facebook, in, and I know that you
hey, how's it going, Chris?
Good buddy.
Tex, I was chatting with Chris earlier on Bard's Logic, basically about the same thing, so we're kind of continuing that conversation. So if you've got a next point you want to bring up, go. Otherwise, we'll go to Chris.
I was just going to say, you know, look, about alternative energy, you have to realize it's called alternative energy for a reason. It works in niche markets, so if you need rural electrification, hey, a windmill is a good way to get some electricity to some people pretty distant from population centers, particularly in developing countries. You know, it has its uses here as well. But the thing is, it can never handle baseload demand. Baseload demand is everybody goes to sleep at night and kind of nothing's really running. Now, there are some factories that run late at night, and if you're in New York, San Francisco, and you're doing trading, they got people awake at night. But mostly the amount of electricity needed kind of dies down at night. Then we all wake up, and guess where we all are? We're all out in the suburbs, right? And so we start turning everything off. So they got to start turning electricity. There's no storage for electricity, right? So when electricity is created, it has to be used right away. So they have to be able to predict what demand's going to be, right? So wind doesn't work this way because you could have 10 megawatts of wind. All of a sudden, you get a spike. You need 10 megawatts of power, like, right freaking now. Throw that wind power switch. You throw it on. Oh, there's not 10 megawatts there. There's 2 because the wind's going slow. Now your grid just crashed. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't work. So the only thing that really works for baseload demand is hydro is very good because the only store of energy that we found for the grid really is water because if all of a sudden you need a bunch of power, you just open those floodgates and that stuff just starts, the water starts coming down faster and you start getting more and more electricity. It's very effective. Then you got coal plants. They can just sit there and burn coal all day and just crank out whatever you need. You know, if you need some more, give us some warning. We can heat up another boiler and get that thing going for you. Natural gas, also very good. Actually, natural gas was cheaper than coal back in July, much cheaper. And then now coal prices are at 2-year lows. You know, so this is what you have for baseload demand. Oh, sorry, nuclear. That's the other one I was trying to think of. So you have nuclear power as well, right? Nuclear power just sits there. It's like a battery, right? You just stick the rods in, and then they do their thing. And then when the rods need to be replaced, you pull them out and, you know, take care of it. Now, in the U.S., we don't reprocess our fuel, so spent nuclear fuel just sits on site. That actually is a law problem we have in the United States. It's not a flaw in nuclear power. France,
as Chris said earlier on Barr's Logic text, that's because of the damn hippies in the 70s. And just as you're on this topic, which I think is a great topic, I just wanted to inform you before you finish your point that I just opened up the microphone of Robert Jetter of Barr's Logic Political Talk, who probably will disagree with you about what you're about to say, so we'll let him have it next and then to Chris. Back to you, Tex.
Great. So, you know, we're talking about how do you come up with baseload demand. And essentially right now there are 4 choices: hydro, coal, gas, nuclear, right? And so everyone thinks, oh, nuclear power, you generate all this terrible waste. Well, that was a public relations thing that the environmental movement did purposefully to the nuclear industry in order to make people not want it, right? It's completely a self-inflicted wound. And so we see Harry Reid and all these other people who's, you know, from Nevada, and they're upset about Yucca Mountain out there and the, you know, civilian radioactive waste storage facility. If they didn't have the dumb law, you wouldn't need this because you could take all this fuel that right now is sitting on site in storage facilities, just piling up more and more next to rivers, because you always do power plants next to rivers because you need new sources of water to heat up and to cool things down and all that kind of stuff. It's just sitting there right now. But it doesn't have to, because you could take all that fuel that's sitting there and you could go reprocess it and you could burn it again. I mean, it's sort of like, think of it this way, a fuel rod of uranium. It's like right now what we're doing is we have a carton of cigarettes and we're taking one out at a time. We're taking one puff, putting it out, and then getting another one. You're not using all the fuel that's in that thing. And in France, they do, because they reprocess. So, you know, that's kind of the story of baseload demand. Oh, and then I'll add one other thing. On the horizon, you have fusion power that could do baseload demand, but it's still in the R&D phase, and also because of that, it's very expensive. I think the cost of ITER when I left was, what, $20 billion? Something like that.
What's $20 billion here and $20 billion there? What's $20 billion?
The advantage is once you have fusion power, technically on paper, energy becomes almost essentially free. But believe me, they're going to find a way to charge you for it and tax it.
Well, that's what they found when Tesla found a way to create free electricity. They bought that, shut it down, and went with Edison's plan so that we're still paying for electricity.
Yep.
Robert, did you want to comment on Tex's dissertation on energy and why Jill Stein and Rocky Anderson are off their rockers? Robert? Okay.
I'm here. I had my phone on mute. In a lot of ways, yes, Jill Stein and Rocky Anderson are off the rockers. But when it comes to France, the only reuse, and I'll use those terms, they only reuse the spent rods. They only use 20% of that. The other 80% is still becomes nuclear waste, which they have to find ways to dispose of, and you can't really dispose of it. So you have to find a place to store it, and that's what the problem is. But I do agree with the fusion, which is, of course, going to be based on something Newt Gingrich said, would be to have a moon base, which people are like, oh, my gosh, moon base, aha. But it's not only the United States looking at that. I mean, you've got nations all around the world. You've got India, China, Russia, England. They're all looking at trying to get to the moon to get what's called helium-3. Which is a integral part of having fusion technology, and Tex was right in the fact that that is a clean burning, and of course not free. You have to build the power plants, in order to be able to use it. So, in that sense, they're not crazy when they talk about that. But I would like to see, as I've said this on many occasions on Bard's Logic and other shows, where I'd like to see the Green Party take a more conservative bend, because I just think that the environmentalists, at least the environmental movement, has been hijacked, and of course that's a show for another day, by the liberals for the redistributive wealth agenda. So they're just trying to use that. But when she's talking about trying to blame Sandy on, of course, global climate change or what have you, I think that's kind of far-fetched, but that doesn't surprise me. As soon as Sandy was coming around, no pun intended, okay, maybe it was intended a little bit, then I knew that, of course, the global climate change folks would be jumping right on top of that. But, of course, Virgil Good in the debate tonight, I think, came back with some good answers on that. So, excuse my voice tonight to explain on Bard's Logic that I went to a high school football game last night for my old alma mater in high school for a playoff game. And I was a very active participant in cheering for the team, thus the voice. So.
Excellent. Well, good to have you dial in. On the nuclear issue, don't want to go into all the technical details, but actually the amount of highly enriched uranium that comes out of their system is very small. They do have storage facilities for that, because the holy grail of the nuclear power industry is if you can get a closed nuclear fuel cycle, which means that everything in it gets burned until it's completely burned down. And no one has come up with that yet, so you're always going to get an amount of waste. It's not 80%, though, I can tell you that. But they're very close to it, and Russia actually has committed that this is one of the things that they're going to try to do, because all their petroleum products, apart for things like diesel, which they use to run their cars, all their petroleum products, particularly natural gas, they want to export all that stuff because that's their big moneymaker. And so if they can run on nuclear power, particularly if they have a closed nuclear fuel cycle, essentially they have free energy, in theory. But, you got to pay people to be there. You got to do maintenance on these facilities and everything. Anyway, not to dwell on that topic too much. But so what did you think of the debate? Robert, were you able to see it?
Well, yeah, I liked the debate, not the venue, but the mode in which they were broadcasting it left some to be desired. But towards the end, it did come through, and it was okay. I was able to get some out of it. Well, someone made a good point where you definitely had your more conservative or libertarian on one side, and of course you're more liberal on the other. And it's a shame we couldn't get more debates from those folks. And I think Rex was on Bard's Logic early and said, there's only 1,000 people who were at the live feed, and of course we'd definitely like to have, you know, seen more on that, because I think it's very important for this to get out. And one point I'd like to make is, with the election only being a couple of days away, is how important Virginia is going to be, in my opinion, in this election. Because, I mean, there's someone mentioned there's like 7 or 8, I think it was Anderson or Nader mentioned that there's 7 or 8 swing states, which is kind of rare in election, you know, historically, to have that many swing states. And Virginia is one of them. And, of course, we know Virgil Goode is from Virginia, and that's his home state where he could – I mean, if you could get enough folks who are, you know, disaffected Republicans, and then Virgil Goode himself said some Democrats as well, some conservative Democrats, that one state, if all the other polls go through as they're shown just a few days ago, Virginia could actually Virginia going to someone like Virgil Goode could actually keep both candidates, and I mean Romney and Obama, from getting the 270 Electoral College votes to win. So I wish more people could get out and hear the debates, because I really think of all the candidates that were there tonight, I think Virgil Goode really differentiated himself from the other candidates, especially when it came to budgets. And he pointed out, you know, some of the things in which he was different. Of course, being pro-life, pro-marriage, spending cuts, when he's talking about immigration, you know, and the stranglehold of big money on our political system, and talking about term limits. So I think in those ways he really differentiates himself, as I said, from the other three. And if more folks, I think, could see that and know that there actually are choices out there besides the two in the duopoly, which that's a term we've heard from them tonight, I really think that things such as a Virgil Goode and then maybe a Ron Paul made could really see reality.
Well, absolutely, Robert, and I think the reason you're seeing this big toss-up in this election is basically people have a choice between, you know, lima beans or Brussels sprouts. Which do you want? You get one or the other. And people are like, I don't like this restaurant anymore. You know, please don't put that on my plate. But yet you're stuck with it, you know. Actually, you know, full disclosure, I happen to love Brussels sprouts. But, you know, a lot of people don't. So I think that's why things are a toss-up. People can't figure out what to do, and then I think more and more people are saying, screw this system. As I said before, these two are so close together. I mean, you might as well be running identical twins, you know, at this point. That's the only way it could become more obvious that, you know, this is a duopoly. And so people don't know what to do. Some people are going third party, and that's creating an effect of more and more swing states. But all of which I think is a good sign, because to the extent that people start paying attention, it's always good. But I wanted to point out an idea I heard recently from Obama. So in his second term, apparently he's talking about creating a secretary of business.
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah, apparently this would be really good. I thought we had a commerce secretary who basically that's kind of what's under it. You know, is Obama completely unaware of the Department of Commerce? He's like, right now we got 9 different agencies that have something to do with business. Okay, so put them under the Commerce Department, right? I mean,
or get rid of them.
Yeah, like I'm a genius. I don't know, put them under the Commerce Department. Yeah, or eliminate them. What are half of these things doing anyway? Screw them. You know, but now he's going to create a Department of Business. Hey, how about a Department of Competence, or a Department of knowing what the hell you're talking about before you say it, you know?
How about a Department of Article 2 verification for presidential candidates who are born to foreign nationals that are ineligible for office?
This is where you're really screwed, because, like, nobody's paying attention. And then you go mention it, like, well... But the media, I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I mean, this country wasn't started this way, a bunch of couch potatoes and all this kind of stuff. You know, you're going to go off the freaking cliff here doing this stuff and just going along to get along and voting the lesser of two evils. Well, at this point, you know, you got like evil and, you know, so darn close to evil, you know, if you consider it the lesser of two evils, then that you almost can't tell the difference, you know?
So, yeah. Well, actually, that was a question that was brought up. It was actually asked, and I believe it was Virgil Goode who kind of responded, and he says, there's not a damn's worth of difference between Obama and Romney. And then he referred to them as Tweedledee and Tweedledum, and I thought that was great. And he said, look, I'm going to be honest.
He did.
I'm going to balance the budget. You won't get more from government with Virgil Goode as president. In fact, you will get less because we have to balance the budget. Now, you know, haven't we all, and I'm both on the left and the right, allegedly, haven't we for years been saying we want someone who's going to tell us the truth, who's going to say it like it is, who's going to lay it on the line and tell us the unpleasant things that maybe we don't want to hear, but it's the truth. And we had Gingrich, and we had Paul, and we've got Goode, and all we do is disregard them and go for the guys with the nice flowery words about giving us free shit and subsidizing this and unicorns and a pony in every yard and all this, you know, free energy.
Well, do you think
that's
that might
completely
be
clean
because that might be because Wall Street essentially funds all these candidates, and Wall Street needs a bailout, and so what they're doing is they're putting people in office who will give them the bailout and thus turn their books that are now in the red back into the black. You know, and so people who talk about cutting government spending, if you cut government spending, then there's no need to loan money to the government. And where does the government go to bank? It goes to them, right? The banking industry. It goes to, you know, the big investment houses, right? So they need that money coming in to keep themselves solvent, so they need to keep the government perpetually in debt, which, once you realize that the government debt is your debt, they need to keep you perpetually in debt to keep themselves in business.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about at the beginning of the show. It's corporatism.
And when someone comes along and starts talking about cutting the budget, like, hey, whoa,
radical pal.
Thinking over there. I mean, this is what did Newt Gingrich in, you know?
Yep.
See, Bill Clinton,
all those crazy zany ideas.
Bill Clinton behind the scenes, he was blaming Gingrich for all that. I didn't want to bow to, you know, this Newt Gingrich is forced on me. You know, he's Speaker of the House. What am I going to do? It's a very powerful position. You know, but now the people love it, so he claims all the credit for it. The Republican Party disavowed Newt Gingrich and his balancing the budget, so now they don't even claim credit for it. And thus you had the situation where Clinton goes to the Democrat convention and talks about how great the economy was under him, thanks to Newt Gingrich. And people are like, yeah, Clinton was good. He was good on the economy. No, he wasn't.
Yeah.
He sucked. His first 2 years are freaking terrible. Everything he did was wrong. He did exactly what Obama did.
Mm-hmm.
So,
stimulus, increased taxes.
Yeah. Stimulus package, Hillary Care, gays in the military. And people are like, I thought you were a new Democrat. This is the crap we totally don't want. And then his approval rating was, I don't know, something down in the 30s or something, which was unheard of back then, you know. Now he's had presidents, they're now in the 20s, you know.
They aspire to 30%.
They aspire
to 30%.
But, you know, his popularity rating was really far down, and that's one of the reasons Gingrich was able to win and then come about and balance the budget, although there were some accounting tricks and that sort of thing. That's the closest to an actual balanced budget the United States has come in our lifetime. And so, hey, it's the right direction. So why don't we go back to that budget, right? And then we could work on all the little various gimmicks and things like that to keep it in balance, right? And then we're actually getting somewhere.
Well, see, but that would entail that you actually want to balance the budget and that you want these things. But like you said, that's not what Wall Street wants, so we get rid of the candidates. And the thing is that that's their game.
They always
get
rid of
the game they want to play. But why are we buying it? I mean, this is ultimately our fault. And, Chris, I think you and I have talked about this, and you've been posting some stuff on your page, but isn't it really our fault as voters that these guys keep getting away with this crap?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. That's the thing. I think, you know, I keep saying this over and over again through my lifetime. You know, we're always going to have evil people who want to control other people. We're going to always have people who want to take everybody else's money and lie and cheat and steal. But they have to have a base. They have to have people that, you know, buy into their whatever it is they're doing. And it just blows me away how ignorant Republicans are you know, I thought this was a Democrat problem, but after this primary, nope. You know, I'm totally convinced that both sides are off their rockers, you know.
Well, I mean,
yes, I mean,
are there really two sides?
Not anymore.
People are again, just voting the jersey, you know. I mean, I have conversations with people all the time, and they, you know, get defensive. Like, you know, I was talking about how I don't like Mitt Romney, and I can't believe that this guy is in a nail biter with, you know, one of, if not the worst president in U.S. history, I'm sure. You know, go back there. I don't know. Not a big fan of Wilson. But, you know, they're like, well, how is he the worst president in history? I mean, he's done this and that, and that, you know, and then you go through, like, the statistics and everything, and then they just refute you with all this nonsense because it becomes about them winning an argument against you and not about the reality of the situation. I mean, because they're literally, their mind is closed, and they're not accepting new information at that point. And so, you know, I try not to have those kinds of conversations because I think it's completely fruitless. You know, if you point to something or some fact or some data, even, you know, pull it up and show it to them. If you got, you know, an iPhone or an iPad, or I don't use iStuff, I have Android, but, you know, you pull something up, they don't listen. They get angry. So, you know, people got to get out of that mindset, you know. It's like you're trying to feed someone the red pill from the Matrix. So,
That's exactly
well. The scariest part to me, though, I don't want to say scary because I don't live in fear, but that's just my West Coast jargon. But the scariest part to me is not the ignorant voter who just votes, you know, the label or the party or the, you know, whatever you want to call it. It's the ones that know better, that have actually done the research, who fought through the primary. That's the part that to me is the most shocking, because they've done the research. They have the same articles and files all of us have read. And they made a conscious decision to turn off that consciousness, you know, and that moral compass, and make a decision to back somebody they know is absolutely wrong. That's the freaky one to me. And maybe I'm being oversensitive, but.
Well, no, you're being oversensitive. That's funny. No, I mean, it's
like,
yeah. That's actually true.
That's like calling us gentlemen. What's going on here?
Okay, gosh. I'll try not to do that again.
But, you know, I think, look, what the debate showed tonight was that there is room for true political debate in this country, that we can have differences on some issues and still agree on the basic fundamentals of the Constitution, and that most people, most voters, know this and are looking for more voices and looking for alternates, but most are also not willing to do the work to get there. And what this is about, what tonight, I mean, when you think about it, okay, you had the four candidates come to be heard. You had Ralph Nader put this out there and get it put together at the last minute in order to make voices heard. And, you know, clearly Mr. Nader did not agree with at least two of the people there, but he believes that the voices should be heard. And that's what contentious, vigorous political debate is supposed to be about. And most voters say they want this, but then settle for duopoly because we've been conditioned to receive information at us from the television or the newspaper, and then just follow the instructions. And we might be the most compliant, quote, free people in the history of mankind. You know, even people in communist regimes were less compliant than we are. And yeah, that is something that needs to be fixed.
The Politburo had a greater turnover rate than the Senate during the Cold War. Because, I mean, look at Strong Thurmond. My God. Guy's still getting elected all the way up to the end, you know. He's not even there. His chief of staff basically ran everything. But people still vote for him. Hey, it's Strom, you know. The guy, for God's sake, the guy ran for president against Harry Truman, for God's sake. You know how old you got to be to run for president?
Oh, my gosh.
He ran against Harry Truman, you know. I mean, what was he, 90 or something? And he's still in there. Just blah, blah.
Yeah, it's like,
why are you doing this to people? Give them this dignity, for God's sake, you know? But anyway, so we just never, that's the problem, is that we succumb to the branding, and not just branding in terms of party, which is problematic,
mm-hmm.
but also branding in terms of this person's name. And since you're never paying attention to what they're actually doing, because you're so busy caught up watching your latest TV show, that next time he comes up, it's like, oh, yeah, that's my senator. I'm voting for him. You know, but you don't even know what he did, you know. No, I did see at the Texas convention, so the Republican Party of Texas convention, Kay Bailey Hutchison actually is retiring. And I remember when she first was running to fill her runoff seat, we were all eager as Republicans to try to get Kay Bailey in and all this kind of stuff. And she's this great conservative. And then, you know, she basically is, you know, been there too long, become a sellout, cutting deals, all this kind of stuff, signing the, you know, going along with the wrong bills. And so when she went up to, you know, talk about her farewell speech, there was a lot of murmuring and boos in the audience. It really was kind of uncomfortable. So someone's paying attention. But people need to start doing that. I mean, really, because if you don't pay attention, I mean, why... You might as well not vote because you don't know what's going on. You got to pay attention to the day-to-day and not just think about the issue in the abstract of, oh, Obama says this and Romney says that. Or when the president's, you know, there, whoever he is, the president says this, but the Speaker of the House is saying that, but over in the Senate they're doing this, right? What is your congressman doing? Where do you stand on the issue and what is your congressman doing? A lot of people, they don't take that extra step. They really don't. And if you did that, you would actually learn a lot about what's going on in your state and community and who you should vote for and who you should not.
Well, the Constitution would be nice to read, too.
Yeah, why not? Hey, might as well read the supreme law of the land and kind of know the operating instructions of the country. Just saying.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like,
it's like,
not like you're putting together... Yeah, it's not like you're putting together some crappy piece of furniture from IKEA, and then, you know, once you get it all put together, you got a couple of parts left over, you're like, what am I supposed to do with these, man? And, you know, the shelf falls apart. This is a country. Read the instructions. But isn't it
it's
a
America,
moral problem?
It's America, RTFM, man. RTFM, everyone.
it's pretty bad.
But, I mean, if you're going to vote and you're completely uninformed, isn't that a moral quandary? I mean, isn't... And you might have the legal right to do it. You have the power to do it. But isn't it wrong to go pull the lever without having any idea who and what you were voting for? Isn't that why we have a republic instead of a democracy? And actually, I think they talked about that tonight. I believe John Carr really laid it out there. And then Jill Stein completely flubbed it up. Yeah.
People get in their car, they drive to the poll, and they have in their head, well, I'm going to vote for this guy for president and this guy for the Senate and, you know, my House guy, right? But they don't pay that much attention to the House, which is kind of stupid. And then they get there, it's like, oh, this judge, I don't know. I didn't read anything. I don't know anything about him. I don't know. I like his name, you know?
Yeah.
People vote on that stuff. Before you go, I'm telling you, 20 minutes, just go get your sample ballot. Look at it, and it's like you could do a cheat sheet before you get the test.
Yeah.
You could say, hey, who am I going to vote for on this? And then you could go look it up.
But
right?
Kind of like
it doesn't
that movie,
take very long.
It's kind of like that movie, The Distinguished Gentleman, the Eddie Murphy movie. Anyone see that?
The
politician died, so and he had the same name as the politician that mm-hmm. died, so he ran. He ran using that name, didn't say anything, didn't show any pictures of him, but he got elected. Because
mm-hmm.
of it.
Sort of like
movie.
Clinton Bush, maybe, you know, something like that.
Yeah,
it's preposterous. And the thing is that there's so much on your ballot. You probably got some ballot issues. Sometimes you have constitutional amendments for your state. You've got, you know, sheriff. And a sheriff is a very important post. And you don't just go there and, you know, pick the guy who's quote in your party. You got to know who these people are, and for that matter, most ballots will have some kind of municipal bond initiative on it. In certain states, those have to be on the ballots. If there's any ballot initiative to either increase the power of the police state, or to offer more debt. Just say no. Even if it's like, you know, for a park you like, just don't, no more debt, because
yeah.
all that debt is taxing future generations so that you can go piss in a park today. It's wrong.
No, but I want to build bike paths.
Yeah.
I want $1 billion worth of bike paths in this freaking place. I mean, it's ridiculous. Look, here's my rule of thumb. Whenever they say, hey, want to issue a bond, okay, so when they say issue a bond, you're like, oh, people will buy the bond, and then the city will get the money, and so that's good. Yeah, well, so they're going to raise a bond, right, which means they're going to go borrow money, and who's on the hook for that money? Well, if you live in that area and you're voting on the bond, you're the person that's going to pay the bond back, right? So we're going to raise a bond to do whatever the heck or whatever. You know, I always just, oh, okay, no. You know, oh, you want more money? No.
How
screw
about
you.
No, you crazy
You're
Dutch
throwing
bastard.
Money away right now. You're just burning it. And now you need more? Good God.
Yeah, it's well, look, that's what it's all about. It's all about greasing the wheels, about getting positions of either power or and or wealth and or recognition. See, that's the thing, is a lot of these politicians like to be recognized. They like to be at the ribbon-cutting ceremonies and, you know, the opening of the local whorehouse or whatever else it is. They like the recognition. So what you truly want is humble people. Now, I'm not saying unambitious, because obviously if they have no ambition, then they're certainly not going to win their race, but not overly ambitious. And you really got to start looking at who these people are, and not only what they say, although that is important, but you got to look, do they back up what they say? Do they back up their words? I mean, the closing statements they had tonight I thought were kind of interesting. I thought Anderson and Stein were kind of flat. I thought Johnson did a pretty good job. But Good, I think, just knocked it out of the park. And I'm not saying that because he's a fellow Virginian. But, I mean, he really did a great job. He said, I am the only consistent and true pro-life, pro-traditional marriage candidate, and I will balance the budget. Now, maybe you don't agree with those things, but he laid it out there, told you exactly what it is. You look at his record, for the most part, you know, other than a few mistakes which he's admitted to, it's pretty solid there. And then he says, we need jobs in America for American citizens.
Mm-hmm.
That was great,
yeah.
You know. And
that's what
and,
controversial
and, I mean,
now, apparently.
I noticed
apparently
he got
controversial.
A little more, I noticed he got a little more fired up than he was his norm, too.
Yeah,
it was
good.
Yeah, I liked it.
I want that clip.
Yeah.
I want that clip where he got fired up and was talking about, I'm not going to tell you what you want to hear. I'm going to tell you the truth. I want
mm-hmm.
that portion of that clip right there. Put it on my ringtone.
Yep. Now, I will say, though, that was my favorite closing statement there, because it really cut to the chase and said, this is how I'm different than the duopoly morons and the three that are up here. I thought that was very powerful. But the most poignant comment I heard all night on the debate actually came from Chris. Chris, do you remember what you said that I thought?
What did I say?
You said something like, this is a great debate, too bad it sucks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
I've seen that.
No, it was terrible.
Because it was so hard
no,
to watch.
Well, hard to watch. Heck, you guys, I have big bandwidth, so I was getting parts of it, you know, like you know, you guys
yeah,
were getting
I've
nothing.
Seen that stuff.
That's hilarious.
I took the transcript
we freaking
of it,
out.
I actually read out earlier on the radio. It's just like, you can't, it's just gibberish. And your mind is filling in all the gaps. I'm like, you know, a lot of candidates would probably do better if they just, you know, only spoke every third word, you know, like two in a row. And then people are like, oh, yeah, I think what he's saying is this, and that's what I agree with, you know.
Did anybody else get the Dream Act talk with the two-wheel legal immigrant song?
Yeah, we're not talking about that. We're not talking about that. Get off that. That'll bring up memories. It's like a flashback. It'll just make Rex very angry, and he won't be able to finish the show, so we're not going to talk about that. But
ID and background checks are okay for guns.
Yeah, but not for voting, because that's less important, obviously.
No way. You never get an ID when someone votes. They just come up and they're like, hey, I'm voting in this election. You're like, oh, get back. Here's your ballot. Choose wisely.
Yeah. Chris, that was a very poignant comment, but I actually thought, and this is going to, I'd like to have a discussion about this, and I'm actually going to bring in a friend of ours who is also the vice chair of the Constitution Party, and that's a mild-mannered, quiet, even-toned, gunny named Randy Stubblebee. But before we bring Gunny on, Johnson said something which I think is key, very, very key, and I think it transcends Johnson. It even transcends the Libertarian Party. And he said that we need ballot access, and to get ballot access, we need 5%, and I'm getting more than 5%. Now, why is that important? This is important not only for Gary Johnson, who brought it up. It's important for Virgil Good. It's important for Jill Stein, even though most of us here, and definitely everybody on the call, agrees with just about nothing that she said, but we believe in liberty. It's important because the duopoly functions by, just like what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, Tex, corporatism is about not making the market regular for competition, but about regulating it against competition. And that's what the duopoly is. They're owned by corporatist interests, so they operate, instead of making the electoral process regular so you don't have, you know, chaos out there, but open so that you actually have debate and a plethora of voices and competition, they regulate it by making it more difficult for someone who is not either A, a Democrat, or B, a Republican to get in. Would you agree with that, Randy?
Oh, no, not me. I wouldn't agree with that.
I mean, you haven't had any experience with the corporatocracy, have you?
No. You know, I haven't had any experience with, the two-party duopoly trying to eliminate competition whatsoever. You know, running for U.S. Senate and they spend nearly $250,000 to keep me off the ballot. No, I haven't experienced anything like that. Yeah. No.
Sarcasm intended.
Well, see, and, you know, what's bothersome to me is that, you know, it's sort of like if your body gets a virus, right? It sends out all these antibodies to go fight the thing, okay? And, you know, particularly with a virus, it loses and then eventually it wins, right? Hopefully, or you die. But the thing that's bothersome to me is that we're stuck in this system, and when you go tell people about it, they don't want to hear about it. They want to remain stuck in their prison. They're like, yeah, well, I mean, what you're saying is true, but, you know, we just got to vote for these two parties. Get rid of them. You know, look, we used to have a lot of different parties in this country, right? And they rose and they fell and they went this way or that way. You know, so it's time for the Republican Party is not going to exist from now to the end of time. The Democrat Party is not going to exist from now to the end of time. No party exists that long. But once they've achieved or done their useful thing, they go into what's called organizational decline, right? This happens to all organizations. Organizations have sort of a maturity cycle, right? And now these guys have been around so long, I mean, you're hitting organizational decline. What are they trying to do? The only thing the Republican Party was trying to do is what the Tea Party was trying to do, because that's what the people in the Republican Party, the voters, the quote base, support. That's what they want. But the leadership doesn't want that because it's playing a separate game. And if our leadership, which now wants to, you know, strangle control from all the state and local Republican parties and of the convention and everything, you know, then why are you in the party?
Well, I think one of the important
different agenda. Go ahead.
One of the important things that must be understood, and you kind of bring this up, is that there is a game. And if we don't understand the game, we will never win the game. And if we don't understand the rules that are applied and the rules that are, you know, out there for some and not for others and this sort of stuff. If we don't start recognizing this, we will be stuck in this fantasy that there's really two choices out there, when really there's not two choices. It's what I call, you know, the left wing and the right wing of the same bird flying in the wrong direction. There's a facade of competition. There's not really any competition. And until we really understand the truth of this game, you know, people say, well, we got to get rid of, we got to vote for Romney to get rid of Obama. Well, you just don't understand that Romney's in the same game as Obama. So until we can help people understand that the dynamics of this game, they're still going to be stuck in this illusion that there's somehow competition amongst two parties.
Well, absolutely.
Did you say
you know, look, the thing about the difference between the two parties is they have moved so close together that you are not getting a choice in Iran, okay? So I, back in the day, I did a lot of studying of Iran. My master's thesis was on this thing, right? I used to work for an Iranian lady, and I did a lot of research on it, okay? So in Iran, they have their constitution, their written constitution, which creates all these sort of democratic forms and all this kind of stuff. And this is from the 79 revolution, right? And then later on, there was sort of the counter-revolution where Khomeini came in and they created what's essentially called the shadow constitution. So for every democratic office or form that they have, right, so they do go to elections, they do vote on stuff, which, you know, if you look at the Middle East back during, you know, 80s, 90s, 70s, 60s, a lot of the Middle East was just complete dictatorship. You know, they may have had democratic forms, but there weren't a lot of elections, right? Iran was having elections, but at every point in the democratic process, between the real constitution, there was the shadow constitution. So for selecting candidates for president, there's something called the Council of Guardians, right? Guardians of the Revolution. And if you want to run for president, you submit your name to the Council of Guardians, and anybody can submit their name, right? So they look at these, and then they determine who is too radical, right? Which essentially means
Gingrich.
Who's trying
Gingrich
to reform.
Is too radical.
Yeah. Who's trying to reform the system too much? We all agree how this thing's supposed to go. Us at the top are supposed to be clean enough and, you know, using our power to enrich ourselves. I mean, it's a very old game. You know, it's not new. So anyone who's coming to change the system or change the game, you know, we're going to weed them out right here, and then we'll find, quote, reform candidates so that people who are dissatisfied with the system will vote for the, quote, reform candidate. But the amount of reform that that person actually is advocating is so limited and so constrained that he's actually on our team. And this is the deal with Robson Johnny when he came in. He was supposed to be this reform-minded.
Did you say Robson Romney?
Yeah, Robson Romney. Exactly. This reform-minded person who came in, but he was completely a creature of the Iranian establishment. Much in the same way, we have a similar system, but we just do it through television. And they just say, oh, my God, look, I'll give you an example. Howard Dean, right? Okay. What was Howard Dean's big crime back in 2004? You know, I wasn't going to vote for him.
We're going to D.C. We're going to Washington. We're going to...
Okay, I digress.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, what is the crime in that? He's just encouraging his voters to, like, yeah, we're going to fight, you know? And it's like, yeah, well, he sounded unhinged. Well, his voice cracked. I mean, for God's sake, he's freaking talking forever, you know, over the last couple of days. I mean, did you see Mitt Romney singing whatever the hell that song was? Oh, my God, that was brutal. But that didn't end his campaign. But believe me, if he actually wanted to balance the budget or cut, you know, taxes and not eliminate deductions or anything like that, all you would have seen is Romney's terrible, you know, singing. Because, look, the thing is, throughout the day, if you have a camera on you all day long, you can...
You might pick your nose.
Yeah. You can be made to look like the world's smartest man, or you can be made to look like the world's biggest doofus. And when you anger the wrong people... They just give all the stuff that makes you look like a doofus. Like, hey, look at this doofus, look at this doofus, look at this doofus. You know, but if you go along with them, it's like, hey, you're a freaking genius, like Barack Obama. Now he's this big constitutional scholar. He wasn't even a constitutional scholar, for God's sake. He was one step above unemployed graduate students. But they ran this narrative down everyone's throat, and nobody pays attention, and they just buy a hook, line, and sinker, and they wonder why the country's not getting better.
Well, because isn't it easier to believe the lie than to actually dig for the truth and fight for it?
Well, absolutely. Because the you can just say, well, the forces are too big, you know, I'll just pull the covers over my head, and, you know, it'll all go away. Well,
it's almost like
it's still there.
It's almost like, right, Tex, it's almost like you've got this farm and you're growing, oh, I don't know, tobacco, and there's this force that has been entrenched for nearly 1,000 years since 1066, 700 years, 800 years, called the British Monarchy, and it has the most intrepid navy the world has ever seen and the most vicious fighting force since the Roman legions. And you go, wow, they're taxing the crap out of me, and it's just too big a force for me to fight. Isn't that kind of the attitude our founding fathers had? Oh, wait. No, that's not it. It was the exact opposite. So the question is it easier to believe the lie and accept the bread and circuses than it is to stand up and fight? Yes. Yes, it is. But who said life was supposed to be easy? Who said that anything good is attained without hard work? And the hard work isn't worrying about what's going to happen on Tuesday. I mean, let's face it, at this point, Tuesday's a foregone conclusion. Nothing we're saying tonight, not this debate we just heard, nothing in the news media, the outcome is going to be the outcome. The important thing is to turn out the vote for alternate parties, and your best bet is not to attack people who are so afraid of Obama they're voting for Romney, or so afraid of Romney they're voting for Obama. Go get the others. There's 90 million that are not engaged. You know some of them. Get 2 or 3 or 4 or 10 or 12 of them to go to the polls and vote for one of these candidates so that these parties have standing, because what we're really talking about is not this Tuesday. We're talking about 2014 and 2016. Because if we want to change this, not only do we need to empower our local representatives in our states and understand where the power really is, and the states have to start nullifying, which many of them are already doing, extra-constitutional federal laws, but you need cooperators in D.C., and the only way you're going to get them is to go outside of the duopoly. Now, that doesn't mean if you have a truly conservative and constitutional Republican or even a Democrat candidate in your district, you don't vote for them. You certainly do. But if you have an alternate choice, that's who you help get there. And remember, we change the House every 2 years. The Founding Fathers made it that rapid because they knew that the President and the Senate could get a little out of control, so they had us have more representation in the House. So we have 2014 midterms where we can help dislodge the duopoly and set it up for 2016. But that work starts right now. Don't wait until, you know, late 2013 or mid-2014 before you start thinking about these things. Now's the time to do it, and I think that's what this debate tonight showed us, that we can have more voices and real debate and really get down into the issues and start following the Constitution.
Well, the thing is, people have to demand it. You know, they have to demand that they hear these things. The Committee on Presidential Debates is a private corporation. It's not, you know, a government entity. God forbid it ever became a government entity. But the two parties use it to exclude everybody else out of the thing. But they would include people if you were clamoring for it, if you wanted it. I mean, look, I'll be honest, the most boring debates I've ever seen have been during this election between Romney and Obama and between Ryan and Biden, although, you know, that one was kind of interesting. But mostly because it's just like they're
feisty.
Men behaving badly type thing.
Yeah,
right?
They were feisty.
Yeah. So that one was kind of interesting, but not on substance it wasn't interesting. It was just, you know, fun to watch them tear at each other over essentially nothing because they had no points of disagreement. But if you want to see actual debates, I enjoy the third-party debates because people are putting forward ideas that actually they expound upon, they talk about, they present, and they're different, right? If there's something new to talk about. Now, I think some of it's completely crazy, but, you know, particularly on the left, but that's because I'm a person on the right. But why don't we as a nation decide to expand the conversation? And then all of a sudden the two parties won't be able to dominate the microphone and just basically count on us to support them when they're, you know, running off with looting the country and carving up the pie for their own ends.
Let me, if I may, just one little kind of a caveat, a little clarification or whatever you want to call it. You know, there are some states, and Illinois being one of them, where 5% you get established party status. However, there are some states where all you have to be is an organized party. I've been researching and doing a little bit of study on this, and I'm getting blown away by some of it. There's a few states where you only have to get 1% of the vote or even less than 1% of the vote to become an established party. There's several of them with 2%. There's a couple of them with 10%. So it varies drastically and dramatically from state to state. I think Louisiana, if you wanted to run for a statewide office, all you got to do is pay $500, and your name is on the ballot. So there are some states that are easier, some states that are worse, and quite frankly, one of the things that we're going to be discussing at the National Committee meeting for the Constitution Party in St. Louis at the end of this month is starting to take a look at some of these states where we can easily get candidates on the ballot and see where we can start establishing a Marine Corps term called a beachhead. Start establishing a beachhead from where we can launch other campaigns and start to really take back this country. So we've got to really start developing some strategy to do it and not simply continue to fly by the seat of our britches.
And Randy,
well, Randy,
to add,
this goes back to... Well, go ahead.
Go ahead, Tex. No, Tex, you go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say this gets back to the issue of, you know, restricting access to the ballot for candidates, okay? I mean, for God's sakes, you know, you got to go through enough hoops to register to vote. Actually, it's not as hard as it used to be, but, you know, there's all this paperwork that's got to happen, and what if you move, and then all this, you know, nightmare stuff. So finally you get in there and you go to vote, and, oh, I can't vote for that guy, like Ron Paul. Down here in Texas, he's not a valid write-in. So if you vote Ron Paul, we're throwing that thing away. You know, well, what the hell is that? You know, what if I like the guy? What if he's the last guy left that I could vote for, that I feel comfortable voting for? What do I do then? Well, so all of this stuff about limiting which candidates can run gets back to this Iranian Council of Guardians idea. But the problem is then when you go talk to your fellow citizens about it, they're like, well, I like the fact that you could only vote for these candidates because then they'd have all these weirdo, you know, leftists running, and then they'd, you know, get a bunch of the vote. Well, if a bunch of weirdo leftists believe a bunch of weirdo leftist stuff, you know, that's what they want to vote for, right? Just make sure that you can communicate why that's stupid, you know? None of those ideas work. It's easy enough to destroy them, you know, their arguments and that kind of thing, and explain why their program doesn't work. So just go have the conversations.
Absolutely.
You know, sitting at home on autopilot like, oh, we have a kill switch, so now we don't get any third parties in. You're only harming yourself, because what happens when your own party jumps the shark, you know, and now you don't have a choice, which is what happened in this election.
Absolutely. In fact, that's a canard, because the simple fact is most people in this country identify as conservative. So all the, you know, if you run 32 left loony candidates in your state, they're combined, they're not going to get 5% of the vote. So
you must,
you know,
be
that,
in California.
There are dozens and dozens of minor parties. They, you just never hear about them because they're clubs. They don't do anything.
Well,
here's
an experience that I had back in 2006. There was a guy running for governor for the Green Party, a guy by the name of Whitney. His first name just went out of my mind. Whitney is his last name. Anyway, and I had announced my intention to run for governor as a Constitution Party candidate. Now, I got to tell you, when I announced, I didn't know my proverbial posterior region from a hole in the ground. And this guy had invited me up to his announcement for running for governor. And he had done this at the press room at the Capitol. Rich Whitney is his name, at the state capitol here in Illinois. And the blue room there is the press place, and I didn't know it. I had no clue where I was headed. And he said, yeah, come on up, Randy, and I'll let you have an opportunity to speak to the press. Okay, now this guy is a Green Party candidate, my nemesis, and he's inviting me and giving me access to his media that he's creating. And that blew me away, and it still blows me away to this day. And it's why I've really invested my time and effort, not only to build the party, but to level the playing field for all third parties. Now, I got to tell you, just about everything that the Green Party stands for, I am almost in direct opposition to. Almost everything. Not everything, but almost, okay? And I'm diametrically opposed to, you know, almost every single one of their social positions. However, they need to be in the marketplace of ideas, because like you're expressing here, Rex, is if we don't have what it takes to speak up against some of those ideas, maybe those ideas have some merit. And if they have merit, then they have a place for discussion. And so that's the beauty of it, is having all of these ideas, whether you agree with them or not, at the table, and let them be discussed, just like we were talking about has happened across these debates, is that here's all these other ideas, and people have to contend with those ideas, and they have to respond to those ideas. And so I think it's absolutely important that we have every single one of those ideas represented out there, so that we can take a stand and say, no, here's the principled stand on that, just like what Virgil did. Hey, look, if you want to smoke dope, those other three are the ones you want to vote for, not me. Okay, so it's getting those ideas out there into the political marketplace so that there is competition of ideas.
If your idea can't stand up to the scrutiny of the marketplace, then it's probably not a good idea. And then in addition to that, what people have to realize is that you are only as free as you want to be. And the reason that we have different rules in different states is precisely the specific setup the Founding Fathers gave us, which is that we would have, at the time, it was 13 different governments that would be laboratories of innovation and would compete against each other. Now we have 50 of them. And if you even go down to the local level and allow even more autonomy there, you would have even more competitive ideas to see what actually works better, not only efficiently, not only economically, but also for liberty. And that's the beauty of our system. But the fact is that we want some kind of national monolithic rule, and that's exactly what everybody hates about Obamacare / Romneycare. So what you need to do is get active in your state. If your ballot access rules are archaic, favor duopoly, you have to change them. Now, when I say you, don't wait for a party to do it. Don't wait for someone else to do it. You do it. Now you go, well, I don't know what I'm doing. Okay, that's understandable. But somebody in your state does. Reach out to that person. Reach out to that group. Reach out to that organization. Maybe it's a party. Get involved and go to your state house and go to your representatives and get the rules changed in your locality, because the idea is that in this country, power is supposed to start with we the people and flow up to Washington. So we have to change these rules. At the local level, you have to be involved. If you're listening to this show, you're the one I'm talking to. And you have to get this show and this information in the hands of everybody else, because we all have to do this. There is no option to not be involved. Because if you're passive on this, what you're saying is, I'm okay with being less free than I was 10, 15, 20 years ago, or less free than my parents or my grandparents were, because I don't want to work that hard. I'd rather that the state give me stuff. And if you keep thinking in those terms, then we will become a corporatist oligarchy, and we won't have any liberties. And when you start bitching about it, you'll be one of the ones they single out for censure, to silence you, or maybe make you disappear. So instead of waiting until then to complain, do something about it now when you still have the opportunity. And get everybody else involved and excited about it. And it's not only that it's the right thing to do, that it's part of your civic involvement and civic duty. But it's also, if you want to look at it from a selfish perspective, if you want to take the libertarian approach or the objectivist approach, if you're not free, then you can't do the things that you want to do. You can't run your business the way you want it to run. You can't go get the job you want to get because they'll set up an educational system where you'll only be suited for certain jobs. You can't go live where you want. You can't buy whatever you want. So it becomes tyrannical because you let it get there. And just because you happen to agree with something doesn't mean that you have the right to force it on others in contravention of our laws, in the contravention of the Constitution. So just because somebody might have an outcome that you like, if they're not using the proper means, it's invalid, because as soon as you violate the rules and as soon as you set a precedent to violate the means, even for an end that you happen to like, when the power shifts, that power will be in the hands of your opposition and you won't like it at that point. The problem is that we keep letting them have more and more power. We bitch about it when it's done by the other side. We cheer about it when it's done by our side. Republicans cheered the Patriot Act, and now they jeer the NDAA that Obama signed because Obama did it. But when Romney gets in there, they'll start cheering it again. Right,
yeah, they're going to cheer. They're going to cheer Romney's replacement of Obamacare. You know, that's what the new ad is. It went from repeal to repeal in place. Now they're actually doing ads. I saw it on my group earlier. I'm voting for Mitt Romney because he's going to replace Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about a play on words, man?
Yeah. Well, it's the same shtick you get, you know, because obviously the issue of the Federal Reserve, which is a huge issue, nearly 100 years' worth of damage done to this country. I don't know how many hundreds of trillions of dollars of wealth we've been robbed of and how many wonderful things the world has been robbed of because of this. And Ron Paul brought it to light, so it's become an issue that needs to be talked about. But the question they always ask is, well, if you're going to audit and get rid of the Federal Reserve, what are you going to replace it with? Well, the question is a lie, because the issue is it sucks. It didn't exist before. Everything that has happened since it came into existence sucks. So how about we just get rid of it? Don't replace it with anything. Are you going to replace Obamacare with? Replace Obamacare with nothing. Let the states figure it out. Let the private markets figure it out. The federal government's broke.
Yeah, and, you know, I've held this argument over and over again ad nauseum. It's along the same line, and it actually got its foothold in America in the same year, in 1913, but that is the 16th Amendment. And, you know, when you talk about, repealing the 16th Amendment, in the 17th, but primarily looking at the 16th, people are like, well, how are you going to fund the federal government? I said, look, you want to get rid of corruption. You want to get rid of this burgeoning government that's blowing outside its constitutionally mandated borders, and you don't know how to do it. You say, I want to get rid of the Department of Education. I don't want to see homosexuals get all these bennies. I don't want to see abortions funded through the federal government. Look. Simply repeal the 16th Amendment and our federal government dries up to its constitutionally mandated borders. It dries up because you eliminate the revenue. And that's all they're talking about. How are we going to have the revenue to fund our federal government? Well, 90% of our federal government should be unfunded. You just don't get that, do you? Okay.
Absolutely, Randy. I mean, look, you know, I've said this many times, but, you know, Cicero said the sinews of war, infinite money. Governments need infinite money because they want to promise the world so that they can stay in power, although they can't deliver on that promise. And if they do, quote, deliver on the promise, they only do so with your own money. So, you know, it's like Obamacare. Well, if you think, why was anyone even interested in Obamacare or Romney Care? Because there's a problem in health care. What's the problem in health care? It's too expensive. Okay, so it's too expensive, so I'm going to make it free, and I'm going to cover more people. Okay, well, if you thought it was too expensive back then, wait till it's free. you won't believe how expensive it is when it's free, because it's not free, because you now are on the hook for everyone's freaking medical bills. And everyone who's got a boo-boo and, you know, every hypochondriac, they're going to go in now because technically it's free. They don't have to pay for it, right? But you pay for it. You pay for it in your taxes, which have to keep going up over and over again. And the other thing is, why is the cost of health care so high? I've drawn parallels with the student loan program. The federal government started extending. They had the GI Bill, right? You fund the war, okay, we'll give you a GI Bill. We'll send you to college now. You know, make something of yourself, right? So then they essentially gave the equivalent of a GI Bill to everybody else, civilians, in the form of Stafford loans and Pell Grants and that kind of thing, right? Okay, well, Pell Grant, that's nice if you get one because it's money you don't have to pay back, but the taxpayer's on the hook for it. Now, there may be some societal good in sending you there on a Pell Grant, but then you have Stafford loans. And once you have Stafford loans, guess what happens to the cost of college education? It starts going up and up and yeah. up because the administrators realize, like, hey, I'd like to make more money. And these students, they have, you know, access to an unlimited source of money. So they can borrow essentially an infinite amount of money, so it doesn't matter what we charge, right? There actually are limits on how much you can borrow. And part of it depends on what, you know, grade you're in, whether you're a freshman, junior, sophomore, all that kind of stuff. But up to those limits, it's acceptable, right? Yep. So they start charging more and more because they've now subsidized it. And so now the university wants to soak up all that government money coming from the Stafford loan so it can enrich itself. The problem with health care was that it was too expensive. Well, why was it too expensive? Because government got involved in it. Remember back in the 50s, 60s, everyone was getting their tonsils out? Nobody gets their tonsils out anymore. Do you know why they were getting their tonsils out? Because it was one of the things that, yeah, it paid the highest, right? So the doctors could get reimbursed for taking tonsils out. They said, well, it's just best to be sure. You never know about those pesky tonsils. I mean, think of all those people in the Middle Ages, you know, drinking, you know, typhus-ridden water, dying from tonsillitis. You know, no. They just
get your vaccines now. Get your vaccines
yeah,
now. Profit centers.
It was a subsidy to mutilation is what it was, right? So why is health care too expensive? Because government's subsidizing it. That's why.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tex, I mean, what you bring up is absolutely right, because you create a false demand and you manipulate the price signals out of the market, which always measures prices efficiently, and create a false demand, which distorts the prices. But the biggest reason is obviously the currency in which you're paying for these things is being debased dramatically, which raises prices. We're in the last 10 minutes of the show, and I suspect with all the big voices we've got, we're probably going to go into overtime, but Tex and I do need the 3 minutes at the top of the hour in order to close out the show for our live listeners. But why don't we go to Robert and then Chris, and then back to Tex and I, and then we'll go into overtime.
Well, thank you, Rex. Thank you, Tex, for having me on the show. And I just want to point out, of course, it's not even really pointing out because everyone knows how important this is. We keep hearing this is the most important election of our lifetime. And I think it's not the most important election of our lifetime, so we can just go ahead and continue on voting for what we've been doing for the past, you know, 50-some-odd years and beyond that, is that this is the year where really making a difference is really making a difference. And what I mean by that is, instead of continually doing it, people's heard me say this before, if you always do what you've always done, you're always going to have what you already got. Well, we've seen what the Republicans and the Democrats, I mean, and I didn't even realize this until this year, because I've always been a staunch Republican since I was 18, 20-something years ago. So, but if we continue to do it, nothing's going to really change, because as has been pointed out, they pretty much are the same party. They're just, you know, two different sides of the same coin. But if you really want to make a difference this year, you know, talk to everyone you know and say, you know, look, I mean, the way to really make a difference is to go beyond what people have been doing for so long and do something different. And then that's the way you can make changes, by actually doing something different. And doing something different is to vote for those Liberty grassroots, We the People candidates. Go ahead.
Yeah, Robert, and the thing is, I mean, there's a possibility that Romney wins this thing, right? So if he wins it, the important thing is not, oh, he won, so thank God Obama's gone so now I can go back to bed. You know, you don't like this guy. I mean, you may be voting for him, but a lot of the people who are voting for him right now and who are, you know, giving all of us grief, you know, you don't like Romney. You don't really like him. You just hate Obama.
Right.
So come November 7th, we all need to start having a conversation about what in the hell we're going to do to get this party back on track, because, you know, it's basically jumped the shark. You know, so you try to reform it, but you build an exit strategy. That's the important thing, right? So try to fix it. Build yourself an exit strategy, because if they do this crap again, I mean, look, if Romney gets elected, you know what you're going to be, all these people are going to be doing in 2016? Well, if you don't vote for Romney, you're going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Well, screw you. When does this end? I hate this ride. I hate this ride. Like, I don't want to be on it anymore. You know, what am I buckled in? Is this seatbelt? Oh, there's no seatbelt. I can leave anytime I want. Okay, so I'm off the crazy train. All right, I'm not doing it. But the rest of them are just going along, and that's what drives me nuts.
Yeah, me too.
Well, tell us what else drives you nuts, Chris. You've got 3 minutes.
Oh, me? Oh, man, every bit of it. I believe that the thing that people don't understand, because you were talking about the health care issue and the driving the costs up, you know, another component is not just government, you know, you're talking about government involvement, but a huge one is socialized medicine that is already being paid for by the government, because they don't pay the doctors, you know, real-time value on this stuff. And so, you know, they're paying 30 cents on the dollar, 20 cents on the dollar. So that drives the rest of healthcare for the rest of us, and insurance companies having to pick up the ball on that. So the more and more and more people get on those programs, the more it destroys the system. And that is just one system. Times that by thousands of programs, and you have America November 4th, 2012. That's the world we're living in now. There is no solution in these other people, because they're going to continue to feed and protect these programs. Those are their voters, their donors, their, you know, whatever, their country club buddies. And it's not going to go away until people wake up and take it away. You know, we are so far beyond anything that's real. I don't know some days what it's going to take to get us back, you know. So that's my input on that. But it was a good debate, and I'm looking forward to the YouTube. I'll have it up as fast as I can. Whoever gets it first, get it to our groups so we can get this thing out so people can hear a real debate. I'm done.
Well, I agree. I think that the idea is that look, we have to take this real debate we had tonight and continue it. Obviously, the first continuation is tomorrow night. Jill Stein and Gary Johnson will be debating in the free and not so equal debate, because Anderson and Goode won't be there, but at least we'll have a left economic view and a right economic view, if you want to look at it from a left-right perspective, which is important. But we need to continue this in the sense that we need to have more debates, and not necessarily just for president. We need to have more debates about ballot access, about where we want to be, about what the Constitution means, about what liberty means. We need to have these in our communities with our local representatives and in our state houses so that we can start checking the corporatist growth in Washington, D.C. Tex, we're almost at the top of the hour where we're going to close out, so I'm going to give you 60 seconds, and then I'll close out for our live listeners. If anybody wants to listen to the overtime, the call-in number is 646-649-1013. It's the only way you can listen to this live, but you can always catch us in archive, and please follow the show by clicking follow below the link, and you can also do the same thing with Robert Jetter's show, Bard's Logic Political Talk, and check out our Facebook page, the Tex and the word "and" spelled out Rex show on Facebook. So you got just under 60 seconds, Tex.
Sure. Okay. So, you know, I just want to encourage everyone. There is going to be another debate tomorrow night, which is the free and equal debate, which has much better audio-visual equipment going on. It's accessible via the web. And I would encourage you to watch it. Many of you have already voted, and so it's non-threatening. It's just people talking. Some of you who haven't voted, maybe, you know, it changes your mind a little bit. But I think it's important to hear all the voices that are out there speaking. and talking about political ideas and how best to govern the country. You know, and again, look, November 6th, the whole thing's over, okay? So it's all a bad dream, and then we wake up and, hey, yeah, it's still a nightmare. It's one of these two bozos, right? Okay, and so you'll turn back into a pumpkin, you know, and you'll stop, you know, white knighting for Mitt Romney and all that kind of stuff, and then we can go back to the conversations that we were having before that were meaningful. And, you know, I just want to invite all those people who have, you know, everybody's got to make their choice, right? All those people who have sort of gone to the Romney camp but didn't like Romney and fought tooth and nail against him from the get-go, welcome back, and then, you know, let's have a conversation about what is going on with this thing being the Republican Party. How do we fix it, and how do we make sure this thing never happens again? And I only see two alternatives. Either you fix the Republican Party, which that rule change makes difficult, or you got to create something better.
Agreed, Tech. And we'll be back tomorrow night at 11. Please check out Bard's Logic Political Talk tomorrow as well before the debate. This is Tex and Rex signing off.
The flames of liberty will never die.
All right. We are now in overtime, and we only managed to sneak in one caller, and I believe I know who it is. Let's see if she would like to join the conversation or just listen. So all of you behave. Harriet, is that you?
Yeah, it's me. I'm trying.
Hey,
to
Harriet.
Yeah, hi. I'm going to just stay quiet for a moment, and then I'll, if I have anything to say, I'll come back in or I'll write it.
Okay, I'll keep your mic open, and we're going to go into recording time for a little while, but it is a school night, so we're not going to have an hour-long conversation, gentlemen, but why don't we go ahead and start with Robert and then go to Randy and then Chris, and Tex, you can annotate in between, and I'll interrupt any of you when I feel like it. Go ahead.
Okay,
sure.
Thank you.
Hi, Harry. It's good to hear you in here, and as always, just we were talking a little bit in the chat. I just want to reiterate, stay positive, think positive. There's a lot of work to be done, regardless of who wins on November 6th. So there's still much to be done, not only, of course, nationally, but, you know, getting more down ballots locally as well. It sounds like there's going to be a lot of signatures that are going to need to be done to get prepared for 2014. So folks who are going to be listening to this on the archive and you like one of these third party or Liberty parties or grassroots We the People parties, November 8th or 7th, whichever, get a hold of these parties. You know, see where you can go out and just already start to get signatures. I mean, some of these you need thousands of signatures. That's going to take a lot of time. So the day after the election, it's not time to rest. It's time to really get back to work because there's going to be another battle to go, and that will be 2014. And so we're going to have to start on day one to get there.
I agree. I've been walking my neighborhood when I have a chance instead of staying on the blog and writing and everything and just talking to my neighbors, and I don't ask them who they're voting for, and they say, oh, I didn't know there were other choices. So the thing there is people don't know, and they need to be educated and introduced to who are the other candidates, because there's no way you can't like them.
Absolutely,
so,
Harriet. And one of the important things is sharing links to things like the debates.
Right.
You know, we have the whole internet at our disposal, and you can share that kind of stuff and get people interested in what's going on. But I think a lot of people, they just like, oh, a third party, that will never work, because it's always Republican-Democrat. Well, that's because the Republicans and Democrats want it that way, and that's because
that's
of the Washington establishment. And they basically go up there. I've been there, and there are disagreements, but they are within certain limits. But largely, they are in vast agreement about everything that goes on in Washington, D.C. Absolutely in vast agreement about these things. A lot of it is arguments over style or over presentation, less over substance. So the people need to understand that there are alternatives, because if you can start empowering these alternatives, A, one of the major parties may pick up that initiative and do something about it, in which case you have now advocated for something that you wanted to see, and, you know, the major parties are adjusting course to address your particular issue, or, you know, one of the major parties falters, and you get something else in its place.
Well, you know, people that, like I said before, people, you know, like to hear these things. They like to complain, but they don't want to do anything. There's always one excuse after another. But my suggestion is to go to, if you have a tea party in town, go to your tea party, get on, and start to speak up. And Eventually, they'll understand and they'll be more aware. And let the, and then in the magazine and when you go to the tea parties, put out a little paper on the table when there's debates and who's doing the debate. And you just don't put one name. You know, you put several names down, and that will help. And who knows, in the future we may get a better third party candidate than we have these four.
Well, the whole idea is to keep getting better, Harriet, and the only way that's going to happen is more competition.
That's right.
Amen, right. Brother.
Yes,
Harriet, the other thing is that, you know, a lot of people think that, oh, well, if you're going alternate party, then you've abandoned these two parties. Well, no, we've abandoned what these two parties have become.
That's right.
The fact is that it would be great for the Constitution Party, for example, to have state house seats, governorships, and more seats in Congress, and hopefully the White House. But it would be just as great for them to do that and for the Republican Party to be conservative once again. Because that way, neither the Republicans nor in the future the Constitution Party would ever be able to abandon their principles, because conservatives would always have another home to go to immediately that's viable if either party violates the principles or perhaps runs a crappy candidate one year. So
exactly.
This idea that you have to have two parties only because there's conservatives and liberals and that's it is not true, and that's why the libertarians are also important, because there are a lot of people who have been in the Republican Party who happen to be fiscal conservatives, which align with our principles of good stewardship, but they happen to have a very divergent view on social issues. Well, which idea is right? Which idea is better for America? That's the marketplace of ideas. But I guarantee you that on certain economic issues, a conservative Republican Party, the Constitution Party, and the Libertarian Party would caucus together. Now, they might not caucus together on abortion or gay marriage or marijuana, but they will caucus together on the Federal Reserve, on the income tax, on spending. And so that's the beauty of the system our founding fathers gave us. And we're throwing it away by playing this duopoly game. So when we go to these Tea Party meetings, when we talk to other people, the message is not about, oh, you know, Romney won and so the Republicans are lost, or Obama won and we have to worry about never having elections again. These are all canards. What we have to focus on is we have to change the rules in our states in order to have more access and more liberty in 2014 and 2016.
Well, that's
you
can goal,
bring a tear
it?
To my eye, Rex.
Oh, you want to hang me?
Yeah, I'm telling you.
That is a goal. And when I talk to other people and they tell me who they're voting for, I don't tear their partner down, because that is their decision. But to educate, and there's time to change your mind.
Right.
Yeah, I have the desire to just rip their head off and stuff it down where the sun shine, you know, but that's just me, and I keep my inside voice in, typically.
You keep your mini jar head on your shoulder.
Right. Well, I have to be in control all the time, because I don't think anybody would want to meet me any other way.
Go ahead.
No, Randy, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was not able to see the debate tonight, but I was actually at church, and our pastor is actually showing this movie, and I can't think of what it's a video about you know, what a Christian's civil duty is. And I guess, you know, tonight actually I was challenged because he just point blank says, okay, Randy, what are you going to do here locally that is going to change some of what's going on around this area? And I'll be quite honest with you. I've not been thinking very strongly. I mean, I am the national vice chairman, you know, and thinking more, you know, in the upper echelons of things. But you know what? On my constitutionally correct shows, we've interviewed people and we've talked about this issue. And I kind of violated some of my own principles in that I am going to start showing up. I live in the county, so I'm going to start showing up to our township meetings. And because I've showed up before, yeah. But it's been years ago. But I got to tell you, you know, when you just, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to say anything. When you simply show up, what I have noted is all of a sudden they've taken note of you and the conversation changes. So, you know, when people are thinking about, oh, I'm just one person, what can I do and how can I affect things? Well, sometimes all you have to do is show up. You don't have to do anything. And I know several people, in fact, go ahead.
Randy, I was just going to say, look, you know, I had a, you know, I lived with somebody who was an elected official, okay? And they basically, they would have to go to these meetings, right? So people from the city would show up for the meetings. But you know what? Ordinary Americans didn't show up because, hey, my show's on tonight, right? And yeah. So I would sit in these meetings, and there were essentially, I mean, I'm not even joking, basically crazy people, schizophrenics, you know, or whatever, who had no other place to go, who would come in, and they would start asking these questions, and people had to address them as if they were serious questions. I even saw, this was in Washington, D.C., where somebody bought a building in near Adams Morgan, right? And they were trying to put an elevator system in and all this kind of stuff. And they were talking about how they were locating the elevator here because it's quieter and it's away from the units. And so when the elevator's moving up and down, nobody has that next to their bedroom or something. And so then this person stood up and was like, well, I think you should put the elevator here, right? And I'm like, but you're like a schizophrenic and you're nuts and you're running around. You're like a bag person. What do you even know about how to develop a freaking apartment complex? But yet they're speaking, right? So if you go to these meetings, right now, one of the reasons everything's all crazy is because I'm telling you, literally, it is the truth that a lot of crazy people are showing up for these meetings and you have elected officials that you vote for and then don't pay a damn bit of attention to. And then they're sitting in a room and crazy people who are looking for a place to stay for the next 3 hours where they won't be arrested for loitering come in and start asking a bunch of freaking questions. And guess what? Because they showed up, they affect government policy. Wonder why the government does crazy stuff. I wish I was joking about that. I mean, that's not to say everyone was nuts, but, you know, there were a lot of nutty people in there.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, but here's the thing. But here's the point, though, is that we've got up in Indiana, the lady who's running for state rep up in Indiana, her husband started showing up to the county board there. He just started showing up. And all of a sudden, the board meeting starts asking him questions. Well, what are you doing here? And so he engages them in the conversation. And then next thing you know, he's being appointed to some committees. And then next thing you know, they're actually asking, well, why don't you run for board position? We'll support you. So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be as difficult as we make it out to be. We look at these presidential races and see billions of dollars spent to run for a campaign when actually all you got to do is show up to your local municipal meetings or your local county meetings or township meetings. Just show up and see what they're talking about. But I'll tell you, when you show up, first of all, they're going to change the conversation. But Lord help you if you show up with a pad of paper and a pencil and look like you're taking notes. They're liable to go into executive session at that point. you know, because you're affecting a change, and you don't have to look like you're doing anything more than just simply taking a note. So it's
and
important
Randy,
to start engaging.
And Randy, if what Tex said is true, you have to show up, because otherwise only schizophrenics and crazy show up, and maybe that's what's been happening, which is probably why we have the mess we have, because we've only got schizophrenics and crazies in office.
Well, you know, the crazies see the world different than we do.
Yeah, look at Romney and Obama.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There were,
I think,
900 people online tonight. For the debate.
Woody Allen said 90% of life is just showing up. You go one of these things.
That's right.
Like, ah, let my neighbor do it. You know what your neighbor's saying? Ah, let my neighbor do it. Nobody's going. And then who goes?
Right.
People who
That's
are like,
right.
ah, I want to be out on the streets. I don't have a home, you know, so I'm going to go in here. Maybe I got some free food. I don't know. What's... And then I'm going to ask about my community, you know, and that's who's going to the meeting. And so you know
That's
what?
Right.
They stand up. They start asking questions. Now they control the agenda. What are you doing?
That's right.
Watching a TV
That's
show.
Right.
Why is the country all gone to hell? This thing's
right.
gone to shit. Yeah, well, you don't go to any of the meetings. That's why.
That's right.
All right, folks. We're going to – it's 15 minutes into overtime. Let's try to wrap this up in the next 15 minutes. So why don't we do this? Why don't we have Harriet make her final comments, and then Randy, and then Chris, and then Robert, and then Tex and I will bring it home.
Well, I just want to say thank you very much, Tex and Rex and everybody online, for everything you've done and you're doing. And we're going to work and try to help it be successful.
Well, Harriet, thank
you
for all
that
you're doing.
We appreciate your support.
Well, you're welcome. I wish I can do more.
We all wish we can do more, and we can, and what we need to do is not only that we need to do more, Harry, but I think that we need to get more people to do some, because if a lot of us do a little, we'll make a big, big change. So thank you
That's
so much
right.
for all the hard work you're doing at the Tea Parties, and thank you for your support of the show. And,
oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Have no fear for what happens on Tuesday. It's probably going to be Romney. It might be Obama. Either way. It doesn't make a difference because our work doesn't end.
No, I hope not.
Gunny?
Well, hey, I echo what Harriet says. I really appreciate what you all are doing here. And, you know, in spite of the fact that there's some that believe the Republican Party can be reformed, I love you anyway. But, you know, the point is that, and I've said this over and just about everywhere I've gone, I'm so looking forward to November the 7th, and we can get beyond this fear-mongering and all of that. And our work really is cut out for us in that we've got to engage the folks who said they've woken up to make sure they've not only woken up but gotten up out of that bed and engaged in the fight. And I'm certainly looking for people to, you know, step up to the plate and say, you know what, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I am ready to engage in this battle and to run for office. And so, you know, I'm got the group Beyond the Election, where we're talking about those very things. And so I really appreciate what you guys are doing, and I look forward to working with you. And engaging with you and all of that, because the bottom line is every one of us recognize that we have a country to save and our individual states to take over for constitutional and conservative purposes and reasons. And I look forward to working with all of you here in the next few weeks to actually start engaging in the real battle.
We're glad to have you on board. Believe me, you're just wonderful.
Thank you, Harriet.
Absolutely, Randy.
You are too, Rex.
That was text, but that's okay.
Okay.
We know what you meant, Harriet.
And text.
And
Diane.
I don't know.
And Trog. And Robert.
Kind of like the whole good night, John Boy kind of thing. Good
night.
Let's make everybody.
Well, Randy, I think the important thing is that, Beyond the Election is – it's a great name for a group because it's really true. I mean, the fact is that, you know, we're talking here right before the election, but the election at this point is not really our focus. We're not trying to – I mean, obviously we want to get out the vote, but And we need to keep working for it. But the issue really is, you know, well, what do you do next and how do you fix it? And I think that it's not an issue of, I mean, obviously you're the vice chair of the Constitution Party, but it's not an issue of which party or can the Republican Party be reformed or not. Or I think the issue that we really all have to focus on is whatever game unfolds, however the lay of the land is, whoever happens to be in the White House, whatever mix there is in Congress, whatever's going on in your state, the issue is always the Constitution first and conservative principles. And the best way we can move the ball in that direction, that's what we have to do. And I think that forming these coalitions is what's key. And there is no question, in my opinion, that this is nothing but great for the Constitution Party, because if we strip everything away, this election, the arguments about throwing your vote away on a third party or not, or Obama and Romney oligarchy or whatever, there is no doubt that the Constitution Party, the platform, is the voice of conservatism, because I think the Constitution Party is what the Republican Party purports to be. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't think the Republican Party can be that again, but it clearly means right now, today, if you had to point a finger and say which is the conservative party, without a doubt, it's the Constitution
Party.
That's right.
Good night, Diane, by the way. I see you in chat.
I love you, man.
What's that? All right, before we get sentimental, Tex, what were you saying?
It's a good
I was just
thought,
saying goodnight to Diane. She said that she's signing off. So I'm now tuning into chat. You know, things happen in chat, and I don't always see it because, you know, I'm doing the show.
Gotcha.
And kind of focusing on
what
I'm
saying. Same
but,
for me.
You know,
and I think Diane's gone, and I'm actually closing the chat because no one really seems to be in it. But anyway, let's move to Robert and then Chris.
Okay. Excuse me. I'm still trying to get my voice back from last night.
Lemon dropped.
Yeah, I think you hear it. I remember you tell me about that. I'll make it quick because there's only 10 minutes left. I know there's a couple Star Trek fans in here, at least one besides myself. And just two quotes from one of the episodes that I like it to say is, one is in every revolution, there's one man with a vision. And I think that's where we're at now is have the vision of what things could be after this election, moving on to 2014. And the second one from the same episode is, you know, push till it gives. And I believe if we keep pushing till it gives, we can really change the political landscape and do away with the duopoly that has been a stranglehold over our political system for so long and has gotten us in the position that we find ourselves in today. And thanks, guys.
Thank you,
Robert. Robert, what time's your show tomorrow?
Well, yeah, with the debate on and then your show, I didn't schedule one, but I was going to have one on Tuesday from midnight to 10 and kind of do some discussion and analysis as the results start to come in. Well, they will starting to come in. They'll be already been coming in for a while. But I'm sure by the time the show ends at midnight Tuesday night, we still, at least I don't think we will have a victor. I know who won by that time.
Right.
So but with the debate,
we might not know until December 8th. Okay, so then tomorrow night, everybody who's listening to the archives, you should check out the free and equal debate between Gary Johnson and Jill Stein, and then tune into the Tex and Rex show at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is Standard Time now. We're out of daylight savings. And then on Tuesday, Election Day, first thing, make sure you go vote for the proper alternate party candidate who represents your values. And if you're inclined to vote for Obama and Romney, remember to go vote on November 7th. And then on Tuesday evening at 10 p.m., Bard's Logic Political Talk, and Tex and Rex will be back Wednesday, November 7th at 10 p.m. for post-election analysis as well. Thanks, Robert. To you, Chris.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, see you, Rob. You know, I think that, just kind of sending back as we're coming into the end here, the end and the beginning is realizing that we have to remain friends through the small things. And I don't mean anything isn't small. If an issue is an issue for somebody, it's always big. But it's about the Constitution. You know, and I've been saying this all day, every day. What state are you? People go, oh, blah, blah, blah. What state are you in? Okay, I'm in Texas. Okay, well, you got this many Constitution people, you got this many libertarians, and you got these people on the ballot, and these people are right in. You got to do the research. One of the things I was going to say, I don't remember what show it was or earlier tonight, that in the state of Washington, you know, they mail out, you register for vote, and you get a voter's pamphlet. And it's pretty comprehensive. And you can read up on people, and then you get online and you spend 10, 15, 20 minutes on candidates, and you find out who, you know, best matches what you're looking for in terms of your values and things like that. But it's pretty easy, you know, to figure stuff out. Now, it's a little more difficult with states than it is national, you know, when you start dealing with, you know, a county commissioner or you know, and things like that. But one of the things that my son did was he actually went to the progressive. We actually have a progressive group here in Washington who loves to attack right-wingers. And so all you got to do is go to them, and they'll tell you, and they pretty much tell you who the best people to vote for are, the people they're attacking the most. But, you know, you can figure this stuff out, and it doesn't take that long, a couple evenings. And, you know, of course, you don't have a couple evenings now, but, well, yeah, kind of. But, you know, you got to do the work. And then when it's done, we need to stay on these parties, and i.e. Randy, and find out who that doesn't win in their particular area that's going to get right back up and go out and do it again, and also figure out what it's going to take to help find candidates for that party in your area. You know, find people who can run, because I've seen quite a bit of data that shows that, you know, sometimes just showing up for smaller positions, whether it's county or even sometimes state, showing up can win, you know, because sometimes people aren't running. There was situations, I've seen situations like that too. So we need to, you know, broaden our horizons. But, you know, as Randy and I have talked about many times, not all libertarians are narco-capitalists, you know. There are libertarians that have a lot of this very similar, if not the same, values we do. So you've got to figure out, you don't have somebody to vote for in the Constitution Party, you have a crappy rhino Republican, find out who the other candidates are and support them. You know, we've got to get all these parties up and running. We need competition. That's my attitude. I love competition. I'm done.
All right. Thank you, Chris. And Tex, why don't we go to you for closing comments, and then we'll sign off for the night.
Absolutely, Rex. You know, one of the things that, you know, look, here it is. Well, in my time, we're November the 5th, okay? So we got one day, okay? And after that day, all the stupidness can end and all the attacks, and you're not voting Romney, you're not doing this, you know, all these people coming after you, all right? So I'm looking forward to the regroup where we sort of talk and like, okay, well, that last battle totally sucked, and nobody won. There were no winners. Yes, you may or may not have gotten rid of Barack Obama. If you do get rid of Barack Obama, that will be a major victory for Mitt Romney. Unfortunately, it will not be a victory for you or the conservative cause. I'm not saying that it's not a plus if you replace Obama, because I do think he's not very good at this job. I actually think Obama doesn't want the job. But I want to have the conversation where we kind of regroup after the election and start talking about where do we go from here and how do we fix this thing. That really is kind of my focus. So right now, it's sort of like I'm sleepwalking through history as I await the outcome of this thing, and then we can move on to what we do next.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment wholeheartedly, Tex. And here's the thing, okay? When we get the results, I don't want to say November 7th because we might not, but when we get these results, you might cheer if Romney wins and you've been inclined to support him. You might even cheer if you don't like Romney, but just because, you know, Obama is such a nightmare. But as soon as your cheering is done, you will get a heavy feeling in your stomach of, what the hell did we just win? And then you'll get these feelings of, well, maybe the Republicans will do something conservative, and maybe they'll convince Romney to do something conservative. That's not going to happen. On the morning, or when we get the results, Obama might win. I actually suspect more than likely it's going to be Romney, but maybe it's Obama. And then you'll think, oh, my goodness, four more years of this, and we're completely screwed. And the answer is we're completely screwed no matter which one of these morons actually takes the White House. But at least it'll be over, and we'll know what we're dealing with. And what we need to do then is get back together, because here's a simple fact. If you truly believe in the Constitution as the supreme law of the land, and you believe in conservative principles, true conservative principles, whether you're only fiscally conservative or morally conservative or both, there are conservative principles in which you believe, and we all have to work together. So once this election is over, we are free to get back together and take a look at what happened, take a look at what went wrong, take a look at maybe some of the things that went right, and then get active locally and start forming coalitions with other people, because we have to all realize it is not even conservative Republicans versus rhinos. It's not libertarians versus conservatives. It's not constitutionalists versus living, breathing, whatever. Okay? It is very simply us as free, sovereign American people with all our different ideas and different walks of life and the plurality of America against a few entrenched, corrupt interests that have put a central bank in place near 100 years ago that has totally corrupted our political process, that keeps bringing us war, that robs us invisibly by debasing our currency, that manipulates the taxes in order to pay the interest on their fabricated debt, taking wealth out of your pocket, reducing liberty, building a police state. Okay, this is the problem. So we really have to start understanding that it's us, the people, against them, the oligarchs. And sometimes that'll mean that we have to make some strange coalitions, but if we can agree on the Constitution, that's where it begins. And then once we restore the proper balance and state sovereignty and free people, then let's go toe-to-toe in the Thunderdome about all the various issues, because that's what America is about. It is about having contentious, vigorous debate in the marketplace of ideas competitively so that we can put forward the best things for all parties. And that's the beauty of our nation. We all have to be involved. So let's get beyond November 6th, and let's really start talking about the Constitution, because it's always about liberty, stupid. This is Tex and Rex, signing off.
Until next time.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me.